The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. If it seems like just about everything's costing you more these days, well, it is. Food for one.
Everything's gone up. Milk, ice cream, dairy products, your meat.
Even the coupons are you know, a little slim now.
The prices goes up every week, and your pay remain the same.
Globally, the price of rice has gone up so much that some U.S. food stores are limiting the amount each customer can buy.
People are stockpiling rice in this country because they're afraid they won't be able to get rice.
Milo Hamilton of FirstGrain.com. Beer maker Anheuser-Busch says its profit slipped because its ingredients are costing so much. And then there's gasoline prices, which went up another 2 cents overnight. Oil prices are at $118 a barrel. Analyst Phil Flynn.
I don't care if energy prices go up when the economy is expanding, but if the economy is stagnant or contracting and energy prices go up, that's when there's real damage done, and we're seeing the damage done.
Delta and Northwest Airlines said today they've lost a combined $10 billion, largely due to higher jet fuel costs. And with the merger in the works, what does that mean for summer travel? CBS News correspondent Manuel Gallegos.
What they're looking at now is basically the things that they always turn to, cutting back the number of flights, flying smaller planes, fewer seats, and, of course, that'll mean fewer last-minute deals and more cost to the consumer overall.
It may mean more airline mergers. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said today General David Petraeus, now commander in Iraq, will be nominated to head the U.S. Central Command, and his former number two man, Lieutenant General Ray Odierno, would take over in Iraq.
The likelihood of him being able to pick up for this baton passing to be smooth is better. The odds of that are better with him than with anybody else I could identify.
Still, with the confirmation by the Senate, the handover wouldn't likely happen before late summer. No time off for the Democratic candidates a day after Hillary Clinton's win in Pennsylvania. She and Barack Obama looking ahead to Indiana and North Carolina, where a controversial ad is scheduled to air.
For 20 years,
the Republican Party in North Carolina, where the primary election is May 6th, says it won't stop running this TV commercial that attacks Barack Obama, mainly by featuring his now retired pastor.
He's just too extreme for North Carolina.
John McCain, campaigning in Kentucky, says he asked the North Carolina Republicans to cancel the ad.
It's not the message of my campaign.
In Indiana, also a May 6th primary state,
I would really welcome
Hillary Clinton asked crowds to donate.
We are being outspent.
While Barack Obama said,
right now, we're winning.
Dan Revive, CBS News.
A phone number used to report alleged abuse at a polygamous compound in Texas was reportedly previously used by a Colorado woman. It's not clear whether she made the calls triggering this month's raid. Breaking news out of Chicago, where multiple fatalities are being reported inside a residence on the city's south side. It isn't clear how they died. On Wall Street, the Dow finished up 42. This is CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your valve stem cover.
Thank you. No cameras. Hold
no, wait,
your applause.
Hold on. You're a what?
A valve stem cover.
A valve stem?
Yeah,
cover?
I cover the valve stems on your tires. I know your tires inside and out. Mostly out.
Well, thanks, but I'll ask my Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer about tire inflation, rotation, special offer.
Fine, then I'll just keep doing what I do best.
And that is?
Covering valve stems.
Right.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
It's time to empty our schedules and fill up our flower pots. Time to unload our inboxes and load up our window boxes. It's time to grow something with Miracle-Gro Moisture Control, the potting mix that prevents under- or overwatering and lets you do just about anything except mess up. So let the creativity flow and the color and beauty grow. Miracle-Gro, it's grow time. This weekend, get to the Home Depot and get growing.
Its future a little uncertain, but a new bill's been approved that would block the Bush administration from cutting federal spending on Medicaid.
With more than enough votes to override an expected veto, the House defied the Bush administration and passed a measure to delay for a year new Medicaid rules the White House says are needed to save money. The administration says the rules would tighten up standards and stop abuse, but they're vehemently opposed by the governors of all 50 states, who say they'd simply move more of the burden for medical care for the poor to state budgets, which are already badly strapped. The Senate has yet to vote on the rule delay, but it has strong support there, too. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
It's called the mosquito, and it's designed not to scare off bugs, but teenagers. It emits a shrill, piercing noise that only young adults can hear. They compare it to fingernails on a chalkboard. Gadget's been installed in places where they loiter, but civil liberties groups plan to fight their installation, calling them cruel. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
You know, a wise man once said, do what you love and you won't have to work a day in your life. Of course, small business owners know that doing what you love sometimes involves doing things you don't love, like the finances. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes Visa.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. Only at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. From April 24th through the 28th, save up to 25% on exceptional paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings.
Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. They named it after me, and I really appreciate it. We've got a lot to talk about, great people to talk with, including you. Your telephone calls, always welcome here. It's a two-way program. Call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. We'll kick off the show with a discussion of media matters. Eric Bollert will join us here in just a moment. Later this hour, Professor Lisa Hajar from UC Santa Barbara will join us. She's working on a book about torture policies and the role of lawyers in the torture efforts of the Bush administration. We'll talk about that. She's also expert on the Middle East, and I want to talk with her about Jimmy Carter's trip and whether it will produce a breakthrough there in the tensions between Israel and the Palestinians. Also on today's show, we're going to meet the president of the Environmental Defense Group, and his name is Fred Krupp, co-author of a new book called Earth, the Sequel. That should be interesting. And Larissa Alexandrovna returns to our program today to talk about Karl Rove's letter to Dan Abrams at MSNBC. Abrams upset Mr. Rove, now a Fox News consultant, by broadcasting an interview with Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, who, it is widely believed, went to jail as a result of a scheme cooked up by Karl Rove and his pals, including a U.S. attorney in Alabama and a former campaign operative, the husband of said U.S. attorney, who teamed up with Karl Rove for 10 or 12 years. So it's an amazing letter. I counted. Rove poses 57 questions to Dan Abrams. And you'll get the tone of that a little bit later on in the program. California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will join us at the top of our third hour today. The newest estimates, $14 billion in deficit shortfall in Sacramento. They've got to raise taxes, and will John say so? And does he agree with Deborah Bowen about voting machine problems? Does he agree with Jerry Brown, our Attorney General, on the conflict with the government, the federal government, over tailpipe emissions? And we're going to get a report from Sarah Mail Merriam. She's been in Pennsylvania for the last few days and watching the election process, and she has a number of anomalies and problems to report to us. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Eric Bollert is a columnist and contributor at MediaMatters.org. Eric, how are you doing today?
Good, and you, Peter?
I'm okay. I try to stay up to watch the coverage of the Pennsylvania primary, but they all went home early and put reruns on.
Oh, did that right?
Well, you know, here we're 3 hours behind on the left coast, and things kind of wrapped up early. And so at 9 o'clock Pacific time, both Fox and MSNBC ran tapes of what they had done at 7 p.m. And I guess Chris went home to cry on Kathleen's shoulder. I don't know. But I found it also disappointing because I didn't get much information. You know, in the Texas and Ohio primary coverage, CNN, I thought, excelled with their that big map that John King manipulates.
Yep.
And, you know, zooming in on who's voting how in what town, I found very informative. But by the time I got to watch TV, which was not that late, Pacific time last night, they'd moved on from all that, and it was just all blowhards all the time.
Yeah, that really is the, you know, the John King, what he does with that data. I caught it, part of it last night. That really is the most slash only interesting thing that you really learn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the talking heads, I mean, you could recite in their sleep what everyone's saying, regardless of their perspective. But the county by county, very interesting, and unfortunately that takes up about 8 minutes of their four-hour coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find anything else that you thought was notable and a good contribution? Long pause.
No.
I stumped him.
I didn't think there was any particular, you know, the results were almost exactly what everyone thought they'd be.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing this for so long, and everyone knows the script. And unfortunately, you know, I think part of the problem is the people they invite to have on the shows. Everyone knows what they're going to say. They don't get particularly, you know, interesting or fresh perspective. So there's never any real shock or interest.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately today, I think some of the coverage went downhill rather fast. MSNBC seemed to be obsessed with this Republican ad that the Republicans are running in North Carolina attacking Barack Obama.
I saw it on the screen at lunchtime, but I couldn't hear what the content was. What's the hit in the commercial?
You know, tying him to Reverend Wright and airing a couple inflammatory quotes, and then asking the Democratic candidates in North Carolina if they think Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright are too extreme for North Carolina, that type mm-hmm. of thing.
Now,
the problem with MSNBC is, I mean, they just kept running it over and over. I mean, I doubt the National North Carolina spent $1,000 on that ad mm-hmm. buy.
Now,
the same old Swift boat, you know, model. You know, Republicans make these claims with these shoddy ads, and cable just runs them ad nauseum for free.
Now, did I miss something? Has Obama named Reverend Wright as his vice presidential candidate?
And then the head of the RNC in North Carolina claimed the ad was about patriotism, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, Eric, that was very disturbing in terms of the day after coverage, I thought.
Let me ask you about this. What is the definition of a double-digit victory?
I would say 10 points or more.
Okay, 10 or more. All right. The actual margin in Pennsylvania, based on the results, not certified, but reported with all precincts checking in, and we do have questions about lines at polling places, people who were not allowed to vote or who say their vote wasn't registered, but the official result is 9.4%. That's the margin of victory for Hillary Clinton, but it's being widely reported as a double-digit victory.
Yeah, I think that's mostly because in prime time last night, it seemed like from about 9 o'clock to midnight, it was a 10%, and I think that's what people sort of went to bed with, and that's sort of what they're using for the shorthand.
Yeah. Eric, I'm still a little stung by ABC's debate a week ago tonight. And to me, the biggest missed opportunity was self-promotion for ABC. They should be proud of the story that they broke the week before about the Principals Committee of the National Security Council approving individual acts of torture and the president's approval of that. Charles Gibson was the anchor who presided over the delivery of those two very important reports, and again, ABC should be proud of that. But he didn't find any time to mention that in an almost 90-minute debate that was mostly focused on the trivial gotcha questions.
Yeah, I think we probably even mentioned that I don't think torture, a question of torture has come up in a single one of these debates, and I think we're on our 21st. I mean, it's amazing that, as you mentioned, ABC, which broke the story, really as a news organization, at least from the political unit, has no interest in the story whatsoever. They don't ask the candidates about wiretapping and FISA. Mm-hmm. They don't ask about torture. They don't ask about... And, you know, the problem with that ABC debate, I mean, there were so many problems. One of the things that people didn't really discuss as much is even when they moved on to quote-unquote substance in the second half of the debate, the questions were just dismal. I mean, they were really sort of high school-level questions, and Gibson's understanding of the issue seemed to be very shaky.
Mm-hmm.
So, they did the gotcha stuff, which they got in trouble for, thankfully. But even when they moved on to, quote-unquote, the serious stuff, it didn't really seem like they had a handle on what these issues were. The whole thing was just a train wreck.
Yeah, and in the exit polls from Pennsylvania, we see that the public there stated that the economy was the most important issue to them, 55%, 28% about the war in Iraq, only 14% on health care. And even the issues over trade, with Mark Penn's demotion, the disclosure that Bill Clinton accepted $800,000 in speaking fees from a pro-Columbia trade pact group. And this is a very interesting story, that here's a candidate who is opposed to a deal that her top her husband and her top aides are paid to support. And that didn't come up in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, I think Obama got the treatment that Hillary got at the Philly debate in late October.
Mm-hmm.
From the NBC folks who decided, you know, she's the front runner, and now we're going to ask her every sort of gotcha question we can.
Yeah,
and this is what they do to Democrats. They don't really bother Republicans with this kind of stuff. You certainly can't go back, even when there was a competitive race, and find any kind of Democratic debate
mm-hmm.
where these sort of gotcha questions come up. It's beneath, the press thinks these issues are beneath Republican candidates, but they are completely fair game for Democrats. That's sort of the established double standard that we have.
And Eric, because she won the Pennsylvania primary, there was very little follow-up on some remarkable comments made by Senator Clinton in the 48 hours before regarding her attitudes toward Iran, this expansion of the so-called nuclear umbrella beyond Israel to other unnamed countries in the Middle East, the promise of massive retaliation, the reference to the deterrent effect of the Cold War that she made on Keith Olbermann's show on Monday night. And I really want to know more about that, and print and broadcast together are ignoring these rather sharp and new comments coming from Senator Clinton.
That's because they deal with substance and foreign policy and actual, you know, differences in the candidates going forward in terms of America's role in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're absolutely right. Of course they should be discussed more, and the whole umbrella deterrent is a very important question in terms of where the candidates stand. But, you know, if her comments had been deemed, you know, if they had been deemed an unfair attack on Obama, or if there were some sort of gotcha context, believe me, they would have been discussed. But they were a serious discussion of foreign policy, certainly raised a lot of red flags for people, but the press just couldn't care less.
Yeah, well, I hope maybe in a day or two they'll figure that out and come back to it. We're going to come back to you, Eric Bollert, in just a moment. I want to talk about some dramatic changes in the newspaper business. Rupert Murdoch is buying a paper from Sam Zell, who's trying to retire debt at the Tribune Company. There's an editor shift at both the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. We'll chew over on that when we continue in just a moment. Eric Bollert is with us. Visit the Media Matters website. A lot of great information at mediamatters.org. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117. Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
I love coffee, I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia's the place for me. Coffee and tea, the honey and me. At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries. Or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
Coffee, coffee,
The Peter B. Collins Show is sponsored by Poly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's powerful new book about Reverend Moon and the Washington Times propaganda machine. It's called Bad Moon Rising. Check out the video, and you'll see Poppy Bush in there cozying up to Reverend Moon. It's thekingofamerica.com. That's thekingofamerica.com. We're talking with Eric Bollard from Media Matters for America, and we're joined by Hal in Coos Bay, listening to KBBR. Hello, Hal.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing okay. What's on your mind?
Let's see now if I can remember what I was.
Are you suffering from short-term memory loss, Hal?
Yes. You know, it's really no surprise that the ABC guys did what they did, of course, you know, with Stephanopoulos's allegiance to the Clintons in the first place. But I see I do see that in a way she is kind of gaining, you know, some momentum, which I'd really like to see stopped. But I think that the way to stop it is for Obama to start talking about issues, economic issues, in the light of the greening that we need to be talking about, community and, you know, working within local communities to.
Hal, I think you make a good point, even if you couldn't remember it at first. Katrina and I were actually talking about this over lunch a little earlier, that Obama has been playing it safe with a make-no-mistakes kind of strategy and trying to rise above the attacks coming from the opposition camp and from the media as well. I think he needs to shift gears here and define himself more completely and offer some new initiatives or ideas to try to move things forward and maybe even change the subject a little bit. But I don't think he can continue to coast and just run a kind of front-runner strategy, because they're sniping at him from every direction.
And I think that, like what I was alluding to, is like one of his themes, one of the things that he's, you know, said that he's betting on, and the whole thing is a grassroots, a ground, you know, building the pyramid over from the bottom instead of letting it drop from the top. Mm-hmm. And I think if he concentrated more on, you know, making that exclamation, you know, a little stronger, and maybe some of these people that he offends with this or that statement, like I was talking to Scott Dick last night too, you know, really, you know. As Democrats, we need to be a little, you know, a little less soft-footed. And ever since, I don't know how long ago, even in Clinton time, you know, Democrats always seem to be playing rope-a-dope, you know, always.
Gotcha. All right, Hal, thanks for your comment. Next time, turn your radio down. It'll confuse you less. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. We're on fire in Oregon today. Hi, Joe.
Yes, well, I thought it was quite embarrassing and humiliating for the country to have the so-called three major candidates on the Monday night wrestling show. I thought Vince McMahon had higher standards than that.
I saw the clips, and it was like a new reality show called Who Mo Dumb. Eric, did you catch those clips from the candidates preening for the WWE viewer?
I did, and I thought it was awful.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you know, I never want to hear anybody say, "Well, we can't let any minor party or independent candidates into these debates because they would trivialize the process." Well, that looked pretty trivial to me the other night.
Touche, Joe. I appreciate that, Eric. We just have a minute remaining, but I want to touch on some developments. Somebody has forgotten to tell Rupert Murdoch that the newspaper business is dead. He's paying $500 million to buy Newsday from Sam Zell, who is a turnaround artist who's just, you know, stripping the Tribune Company of its assets to line his own pockets.
Someone also forgot to tell him there's the FCC passed regulations limiting the number of media properties people can own. I mean, Murdoch already has a waiver before the FCC in order to purchase the Wall Street Journal, since he already owns the New York Post and two television stations in New York.
Yeah.
And before that's been okayed, he's going to buy Newsday and ask for another waiver. I think it indicates he doesn't really take those FCC rules very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll find out in coming weeks and months whether the FCC itself takes these limitations on media consolidation seriously, or if it's just sort of a paperwork process that, you know, billionaires need to go through in order to buy as many properties as they want.
Yeah, and Sam Zell is a very interesting guy. He got that Tribune Company for next to nothing. I mean, really, a couple of hundred million dollars that they cashed him out on the day he took over. He's going to dismantle that baby, and it's a real setback for newspapers in this country. Eric Bollard, thank you very much. We'll talk again soon.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Visit MediaMatters.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I I want to thank my friends and our labor unions for standing with us every step of the way.
Senator Hillary Clinton, after a solid presidential primary win in Pennsylvania against Senator Barack Obama, Clinton spoke directly to blue-collar workers after her clear victory last night.
I'm in this race to fight for you. To fight for everyone who's ever been counted out. For everyone fighting to pay the grocery bills or the medical bills, the credit card and mortgage payments, and the outrageous price of gas at the pump today.
Ted Kirsch is president of the Pennsylvania American Federation of Teachers, a union backing Clinton. He says blue-collar workers gave Clinton this win.
Well, the blue-collar workers are the people of this country. They're not the money people. They're the people who are suffering from the Bush economy. And that's why the people who are hit hardest by the issues are voting for Hillary.
Obama had the support of the SEIU, the Teamsters, and other Change to Win unions. But as he told his supporters in Indiana, the real power to change America is in our hands.
You can make the selection about how we're going to help those workers in Logansport, how we're going to retrain them and educate them and make our workforce competitive in a global economy. You can make the selection about how we're going to make health care affordable for that family in North Carolina, how we're going to help those families sitting around the kitchen table tonight pay their bills and stay in their homes.
Janitors, iron workers, teachers, healthcare workers, and actors recently took part in Hollywood to the Docks, a 28-mile walk from South L.A. to the Port of Los Angeles. More than 5,000 union members and supporters took part in the march. Leovani Albano met participants along the way.
The three-day series of events, part of a citywide effort to strengthen ties among workers and garner support from the community for unionization. Anthony Sestaro, who was with the Screen Actors Guild, participated in the event.
LA's a labor town, and the efforts that the labor unions have made in raising their own working conditions help working conditions for everybody.
This year, LA workers are at a critical juncture in organizing, with more than 350,000 workers belonging to 30 local unions renegotiating their union contracts. At the same time, over 30,000 workers will continue their struggle to join a union. Maria Elena Durazo is Secretary Treasurer with the L.A. County Federation of Labor.
Luckily, there are workers who are courageous enough to say we want to join together and push back because we want more than a living wage. We want health benefits. We want a retirement plan.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next hour, we'll meet the president of the Environmental Defense Fund, Fred Krupp. And about an hour away, we're going to go line by line through Karl Rove's tearful letter to Dan Abrams at MSNBC. It's got 57 questions.
I feel so extraordinary. Something's got a hold on me. I get this feeling I'm in motion. I said I'm
Welcome back, Lisa Hajar, to the Peter B. Collins Show. She teaches in the Law and Society program at UC Santa Barbara, currently conducting interviews and research on U.S. interrogation and detention policies toward prisoners at Guantanamo Bay in Iraq and Afghanistan. And she is also a member of the editorial committee of the Middle East Report. And so I want to ask her a range of questions related to torture. We'll get to that in a bit. Professor, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And I wanted to start off by asking you about something we just touched on in the preceding segment as we were critiquing the media's performance. Senator Hillary Clinton has made some remarkable statements over the last 72 hours about her views on Iran, and she was expressing beyond a hypothetical what she would do if Iran launched a nuclear attack on Israel or some other neighboring country. And a couple of things here. She has expanded the so-called deterrent umbrella or nuclear umbrella that the U.S. has previously offered to Israel beyond their borders, but not quite specific as exactly who qualifies for this new protection. But she also, in comments to Keith Olbermann on MSNBC on Monday night, talked about, almost reverently, about the Cold War and how the mutual assured destruction strategies of the U.S. and the Soviet Union served as a deterrent and prevented a nuclear war. Now, we can parse that in a lot of different ways, but I think it's really dangerous and rather extreme to inject mutual assured destruction and the tactics of the Cold War into a confrontation with Iran that has not even developed into something that we could predict 2, 3, 5 years down the road.
I agree with you completely. It's an excellent way to frame things. That, you know, obviously Clinton wants to look plausibly tough, you know, as a means of selling her candidacy first to the Democratic Party and then to the nation. But the very first thing to note is, A, Iran, of course, does not have nuclear weapons, and B, there's no suggestion or indication that Iran would, you know, attack Israel. I mean, it's a kind of, you know, prophesizing on an absurdity, you know, for a political point. I mean, the whole scenario is absurd from start to go. But it's, you know, in that sense, you know, Iran does not have nuclear weapons. Iran has never attacked any of its neighbors militarily, as opposed to, you know, other countries in the region. So postulating about what the United States would do if Iran did certain things is just, I mean, it really is fear-mongering, you know, coupled with a complete divorce from reality.
And doesn't it actually go beyond what John McCain has said?
Yes.
I mean, this is the most hawkish commentary about Iran from a currently viable presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I mean, I think that, you know, this kind of comment is directed literally at the American public and for the American public, because it has no relevance to the Middle East since it's based on, as I said, you know, complete absurdities. But it is a question of what Hillary Clinton believes the American public will, you know, find persuasive in assessing whether or not she's got the, you know, the cojones to lead the country, and in the notion that our options are, you know, massive military use of force. I mean, where is the appreciation for diplomacy? And leaving aside, you know, the realities, where is the notion of multilateralism or, you know, any of the things that one would hope mm-hmm. would always be prioritized over, you know, a military option as a last measure if there was really, you know, compelling need for it. So
well,
this kind of, yeah, military first is just very unprofessional, and it's very it should be discouraging for anyone, even Hillary supporters.
And it, you know, diplomats and leaders sometimes use what we call a kind of constructive ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
And one can understand that. You want to, you know, that all options on the table kind of statement. But she went beyond that into an explicit, this is a quote from her interview with Keith Olbermann. She said that she wanted to make it clear to Iran that any use of nuclear weapons against Israel would provoke a nuclear response from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is upping the ante. It is increasing tensions. And I have been sharply critical of Bush and Cheney for the saber-rattling that they have done against Iran over the past 2 years, which has not stopped, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But this tops that mm-hmm. in a way that I find deeply frightening.
Right. Well, you know, if we recall back when Donald Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense and the first clamorings were made about a potential preemptive strikes on Iran, Rumsfeld was the one who had at least whether he came up with the idea or was at least articulating the notion of, quote, tactical nuclear weapons, you know, bunker busters. And even that idea of using what are perceived, I mean, as though nuclear weapons could be limited in their, you know, sort of damaging consequences for, you know, human beings, civilians, and the environment was, you know, opposed by many people at the time. But that, you know, was, you know, I mean, as you said, Hillary Clinton's statement of a mutual, I mean, there's nothing mutual about it, of a kind of assured destruction, is just, I mean, it's flagrantly illegal, aside from anything else. I mean, there's a very strong question about whether or not it's even legal, let alone, you know, useful to use nuclear weapons because of the fact that they simply would kill innumerable civilians. I mean, they're just, the damage is so much disproportionate to any possible achievement that they may not be legal. And to even talk about, you know, that kind of a thing is to, you know, essentially say that all Iranian civilians are completely targetable as a political response. I mean, it's abhorrent.
And Lisa Hajar, just the other night I moderated a conversation with Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector. He's touring the country to sound the alarm about his concerns about this administration, Bush and Cheney, vis-a-vis Iran. And he stated quite succinctly that there was an order embedded in one of the defense authorization bills last year to create a new bunker-busting non-nuclear weapon, but it's a huge piece of munitions, so large that it requires modifications to B-2 bombers, and that those bombers then require modifications to the hangars where they are kept. And on all three of these issues, the due date for completion was April 2008. And so Scott Ritter now postulates that at any time Bush could launch this kind of an attack. They might wait and see what happens in November. And if McCain gets elected, they might hold off. But if a Democrat gets elected, they might say, hey, we got nothing to lose and we got our finger on the trigger. So when I see a reckless administration like Bush being trumped by these comments from a Democratic candidate, it's really mind-boggling, and it makes me angry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, indeed. I mean, I think that, you know, to the extent that most Americans don't know anything about the Middle East, and that would also include Hillary Clinton, unfortunately, that, you know, this kind of a commentary, as though there's an actual threat, as though this would be a reasonable response, does serve the very purpose that the Bush and Cheney administration has served, which is to evoke fear in the public and make acceptable the unacceptable. You know, in other words, the idea that there's a bipartisan sense that attacking Iran is a good idea, I mean, this kind of contributes to that. And certainly, as you know, Bush and Cheney have nothing to lose, and so there is a sense that they might very well sort of do this last deed while they're in office. There certainly is no indication that they're absolutely deterred from doing this, and I think that Hillary Clinton, if there is an attack on Iran, and, you know, as horrific as, you know, the damage it would do to just, I mean, it would, I mean, to say it would destabilize the whole Middle East is a grotesque understatement.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, Clinton is now, you know, would be partially to blame for this.
Well, and the fallout zone of the nations between Israel and Iran, I mean, it's just all incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the media has just let this issue lie. We got Gina and Salinas. Hi, Gina. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Lisa Hajar.
Oh, hi. Hillary, in her speech,
She said she wanted to set up a non-proliferation pact with the neighbors around Iran.
That's not what she said.
She did in the speech I heard.
Where was that? Hello, Gina. Go ahead. Turn your radio off, okay?
Okay. And she and if Iran attacked anybody, any one of the Israel or anyone in that pact.
That's not non-proliferation, Gina. What she offered was an extension of the so-called nuclear umbrella. That's not non-proliferation.
That was what the umbrella was, but she wanted to get with the neighbors around Iran and have everybody sign a pact not to go into to.
Now, Gina, do you know how incoherent this is? She talks about the neighbors of Iran. That would include Syria.
Hey, pull that up and listen to the first part of it.
I'll play it for you in just a second.
Yeah, but play the first part, too.
This doesn't have anything to do with non-proliferation.
Yes, it does.
Here's the clip from ABC's Good Morning America.
Oh, well, that's probably the wrong clip.
Tomorrow, ABC News' Chris Cuomo asked Clinton what she would do if Iran attacked Israel with nuclear weapons.
In the next 10 years, during which they might foolishly consider launching an attack on Israel, we would be able to totally obliterate them.
That was the comment. Totally obliterate them. So, Gina, thank you for your call today, and I'm sorry you picked up the wrong message from Senator Clinton. This idea of total obliteration, that's not diplomatic. And Lisa Hajar, it just leaves me wondering what the real intention is of this initiative by the Clinton campaign.
Well, I do just think it is like trying to make her look, you know, like, you know, tough. And it just, it's so unfortunate that we've come to a time where the only, you know, kind of characteristic that seems plausibly sellable to the American public is who can bomb who the hardest. You know, I mean, that just is a very unfortunate statement.
Now,
I wanted to come back to, I mean, I think that, I don't know what the caller Gina was referring to, but there is an element of, and I don't know if Clinton said it, but the notion that countries don't have to develop nuclear weapons because they would be protected by the U.S. The U.S. would attack anybody who threatens them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that that is always been part of the, you know, broader landscape of, you know, countries with nuclear weapons like the United States trying to hold off other countries from getting them by promising, like, if you don't develop nuclear weapons, you won't be vulnerable to nuclear attack by others.
Okay, but I wouldn't call that a non-proliferation concept, would
right.
you?
Yeah, well, it's more of a, well, only in the sense that people would say they don't need their own nuclear weapons. Because,
yeah, we got your back.
Okay.
Jake and Eureka, quick comment. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, Peter B. I think we should all be very concerned about Hillary Clinton's comments about obliterating Iran. After all, she did sign on to Joe Lieberman's amendment calling for apparently an attack on Iran. This appears to be the momentum that's building in the Bush administration before they leave office.
Let me just clarify a little bit. The Kyle Lieberman amendment was a resolution, non-binding, and to me the most difficult part of it was that it labeled the Quds Force, an element of the Iranian military, as terrorists, which many people think would permit the Bush administration to rationalize an attack because, oh, we're going after the terrorists, and after all, you authorized me to go after terrorists. And so that's the linkage there, but I think it's a little, what you said was a little stronger than that, Jake.
Well, I do understand. I believe that, in fact, the reason for the resolution was, like you said, to give Bush a green light. He could say that, in fact, since the Iranian special forces have been categorized as terrorists, we can now go ahead and attack them without any further authorization from Congress. And I do believe that that apparently is what is on the horizon. And the fact that Hillary Clinton is not standing up against it is just another reason why I don't think she's the right person for the nomination.
All right, Jake, thank you very much. We're going to continue with Professor Lisa Hajar from UC Santa Barbara in just a moment. Get her comments about Jimmy Carter's recent peace mission to Gaza and the West Bank. And if there's time, we'll talk about torture in Gitmo, too. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show 8 minutes before the hour.
Came from the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell.
We're talking with Professor Lisa Hajjar from the University of California, Santa Barbara. She teaches in the Law and Society program there. And Lisa, I wanted to get your thoughts about former President Carter's visit to the Mideast over the last week or so. And he irritated Israel and the administration and even was rebuked by Barack Obama. And there's an editorial in the Chronicle here in San Francisco today scolding him. And frankly, I think what he did is vital because the Bush-Rice talks are going absolutely nowhere. It's just window dressing here at the end of the term. And he really is trying to deal with fundamental issues. And he recognizes a simple fact. Hamas won the election. And we have ever since then tried to rewrite history and isolate Hamas, and we've supported Israel's efforts to do so. And sure, there are a lot of problems with Hamas. I'm not trying to build them up like they're the Boy Scouts. And the missile attacks continue, and Hamas leaders refused Carter's request to stop that. But there were breakthroughs in terms of a path forward, trying to break up the pieces here and say, okay, we'll start with Gaza and work on the West Bank later. So we're seeing some flexibility coming from Hamas. How do you read that signal, and will it be responded to in kind by Israel and by the Bush administration?
Well, I think I agree with you that Carter has done something that's absolutely essential, and it is a great irony that only when somebody is out of office are they capable of thinking and acting in a manner that's actually appropriate to the circumstances, and you know, or you know, how divorced our current bipartisan political system is from sort of the diplomatic realities. And diplomacy, of course, is premised on the notion that one negotiates with enemies, not simply or not even necessarily with friends. You know, and so Hamas is an entity to be contended with. If the United States were serious about, you know, the notion of promoting democracy, you know, our foreign policy would at least, even without, understating that the gross violations that Hamas is engaged in terms of attacking civilians, et cetera. But there is a sense that, indeed, as you noted, the Palestinians did elect Hamas to office, and there is some need to recognize even the most unpalatable governments as being the people with whom one negotiates. We negotiate, you know, our government negotiates with North Korea and, you know, governments that we, you know, find quite unacceptable as far as what they do to their own people or their neighbors. It's necessary, I think, for Hamas to be part of the picture. And Gaza has just, I mean, really, it's in a protracted and downwardly spiraling humanitarian crisis. The large population and very poor population of Gaza, in a sense, has been trapped in what is an open-air prison, subjected both to the consequences of Hamas's attacks on Israeli sites, but the much more massive and undiscriminating attacks by Israel on Palestine. And I think that, you know, Hamas was unwilling to agree to the request for a unilateral ceasefire on the hope that, you know, Israel has indicated nothing to suggest that they would be willing to accommodate the humanitarian needs. And so I guess Hamas figures that the continuing threat of rocket attacks is the only possibility of getting Israel to the table, but, you know, that it should be a mutually agreed ceasefire and the beginnings of negotiations. You know, the United States is powerful, Israel is powerful, and there's a sense that they don't need to consider the humanitarian situation, and they don't need to deal at all with Hamas. I mean, it's not so costly to continue the crisis and the consequences and to constantly portray Israel as the victim of Hamas, which I think, you know, sort of distorts the actual size and scope of suffering on both sides of the Green Line.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, I invited you to come on and talk about torture stuff. We've got about a minute and a half remaining. The most alarming thing that I've learned recently, in addition to the principals who actually approved individual acts of torture, is what appears to be the widespread use of drugs on detainees. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that many of them got suppositories inserted in their rear ends when they were transported, hooded and shackled and all that. But it's just another layer of shock, I guess, to see that we're using drugs to try to get people to say things, kind of irrespective of whether what they say has any value or not.
Right. I mean, I would say that, you know, unfortunately, this use of drugs is actually, as we're slowly learning, is more pervasive among other U.S. institutions, ICE, and, you know, in the prisons and so on. The very plain issue that I would state is that the use of drugs is illegal. I mean, that is one of the prohibitions in the Torture Convention. And John Yoo, who the recently declassified March 2003 memo, basically said, go ahead, as long as the drugs don't cause permanent psychological damage, go ahead and use them. So the question of drugs is a clear red line. It's either yes or no. The answer is no. And he said, well, you know, let's move the line. And that is appallingly and flagrantly illegal.
Yeah. Well, and they probably got free prescription drugs, you know.
Right, exactly.
Lisa, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I appreciate
Thank you
your
so
passion,
much.
And we'll talk again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Lisa Hajar from UC Santa Barbara. We're going to take a break and then return on the Peter B. Collins Show, because that's how we do it. Next hour, we're going to meet the head of the Environmental Defense Fund, Fred Krupp, and also Larissa Alexandrovna with some inspired readings from a letter by Karl Rove to NBC anchor, MSNBC anchor Dan Abrams. Also on today's program, Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. Grab a podcast. Link is on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. My thanks to our producer, Katrina Rill.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
When fuel prices go up, eventually, so does everything else.
What is unusual is the ferocity at which prices have gone up, especially when demand seems to be weakening.
The general in charge of U.S. forces in Iraq gets a promotion.
I have recommended, and the president has approved and will nominate, General David Petraeus as the new commander of Central Command.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Harley Carnes. Oil up near $120 a barrel during today's trading. How are high fuel prices hurting you? At the dinner table is how.
Well, everything's gone up. Milk, ice cream, all your dairy products, your meat.
Even the coupons are a little slim now.
The prices goes up every week. And the prices goes up and your pay remain the same.
Fuel's impact spreads across the economy like an oil spill.
This increase this year is different. I don't see it as a normal cost of doing business. I see it as a reflection of a weakening economy, the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates, the weakening of the dollar.
Oil analyst Phil Flynn says it is very unusual to have reduced demand, as we are seeing in the U.S., fail to bring the price back down. And it takes fuel to produce and deliver the food. And if prices keep going up, your supermarket may have a hard time stocking all the shelves. Rice, for example, says Milo Hamilton at FirstGrain.com.
We don't have a shortage of rice in the U.S., but the price has gone up because globally there's less rice for export than there was last year.
Ed Crowell at the Georgia Motor Trucking Association says it's the increasing cost of diesel fuel.
They're either going to have to stop making deliveries so they don't lose money on every load, or they're going to end up going out of business.
Nikki Gregory agrees. He runs a produce distributorship and says grocers just won't be able to stock some items.
Everybody will fill up those trucks with what's hot. If strawberries is hot that week, we won't bother with cantaloupe.
Pete Combs, CBS News, Forest Park, Georgia.
And now this.
I was diagnosed with diabetes. My doctor was a huge help. But I was still anxious, and I found myself wanting even more information.
Only Aetna members have access to Aetna Navigator, a secure online resource that enables members to check the status of their claims and provides information on everything from wellness to diabetes, as well as procedure costs and hospital quality ratings.
Now I feel like I'm in control of my diabetes, instead of it controlling me.
We want you to know. Aetna. To learn more, go to Aetna.com.
Plans offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company. Health insurance plans contain exclusions and limitations.
Brace yourselves, because I'm going to bring up a subject nobody likes to think about. Buying a used car. I know, painful. Well, I've got a painless solution. Honda Certified Used Cars. Their well-maintained late-model Hondas each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with a 7-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. They'll even provide a Carfax vehicle history report. Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
Army General David Petraeus appears earmarked for promotion to lead U.S. Central Command. Lieutenant General Ray Odierno would replace him as commander of U.S. forces in Iraq. CBS's David Martin at the Pentagon says Petraeus' job would get more complicated.
Once he becomes the central commander, then he'll be responsible for both Iraq and Afghanistan. He will feel much more acutely the problem of what happens if you don't bring troops out of Iraq and make them available for Afghanistan.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Republicans rushed to praise General Petraeus, who's become the main defender of Iraq war strategy, while Democrats were far cooler. But still, Senate confirmation is very likely. Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid pointedly noted Petraeus will soon be working for a new president and said senators will be looking for a commitment that he'll implement any major new changes in strategy the next president may want.
Campaigns run on ideas and 30-second commercials.
I would really welcome a contribution because we are being outspent. And in Pennsylvania, somewhere around three and a half to one, we really had to hustle. You know, my opponent is formidable.
Barack Obama spent a lot more than Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania and still lost.
Don't worry about the party being divided in November, because the Democratic Party is going to recognize as soon as we have a nominee that there is too much at stake for us to be divided. There is too much at stake in this election.
Republican John McCain has asked the party in North Carolina not to run the TV ad that's critical of Obama's longtime controversial former pastor. North Carolina GOP officials say, however, they plan to run the ad anyway because those with mentor influence on Obama do matter. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your valve stem cover.
Thank you. No cameras. Hold
no, wait,
your applause.
Hold on. You're a what?
A valve stem cover.
A valve stem
cover? Yeah, I cover the valve stems on your tires. I know your tires inside and out. Mostly out.
Well, thanks, but I'll ask my Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer about tire inflation, rotation, special offers.
Fine, then I'll just keep doing what I do best.
And that is?
Covering valve stems.
Right.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
It's time to empty our schedules and fill up our flower pots. Time to unload our inboxes and load up our window boxes. It's time to grow something with Miracle-Gro Moisture Control, the potting mix that prevents under- or overwatering and lets you do just about anything except mess up. So let the creativity flow and the color and beauty grow. Miracle-Gro, it's grow time. This weekend, get to the Home Depot and get growing.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
How about that?
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
As promised, a little bit later this hour, a letter written by Karl Rove, in between sobs, as he poses 57 questions to Dan Abrams of MSNBC, because Abrams allowed Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, to speak and point a finger at Karl Rove. Oh, poor Karl. It'll be at least a three-hanky half hour with Larissa coming up about 30 minutes from now.
I've been in a cave for 40 days. Only a spark to light my way. I want to give out. I want to give in. This is our crime. This is our sin. But I still believe. I still believe.
Yes, earth lovers, we're all sinners.
And through the grief.
But I still believe.
Through the lies.
And here comes a green believer. Fred Krupp is president of the Environmental Defense Fund and co-author of a new book called Earth, the Sequel, The Race to Reinvent Energy and Stop Global Warming. Fred Krupp, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Nice to have you on the left coast. I understand you had an almost sellout crowd at the Commonwealth Club for a talk earlier today.
We did indeed.
Yeah. And what kind of, was it the downtown business crowd coming to see what you have planned for their future?
It was a very diverse crowd. There were business folks in there. There were college students, college professors. There were people on their lunch break from work. Very diverse crowd. It was a wonderful crowd. They asked many, many questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, my first question for you, Fred, is as I review your history, and I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but when we get a copy, I certainly will. I see you as somebody who's different from the first generation of environmentalists, that you're not content just to file lawsuits and send out fundraising letters, but you actually get your hands dirty and mix it up with the corporate people who are responsible for many of the environmental problems that we have, and you get down into business mode and try to work with them on terms that are meaningful to them. Talk a little bit about this approach of yours to dealing with these problems and not really just sitting there and kind of lobbing green grenades.
Well, we're all about getting results, and if we're going to move America on environmental problems, we have to find ways to move American business. So sometimes we've partnered with companies, sometimes we've sued them. In the case of a Duke Energy, the third biggest coal-burning power company, we've partnered with them in pressing to get a global warming law, strong global warming law through Congress. They've joined the United States Climate Action Partnership. On the other hand, we disagreed with how they were interpreting the air pollution laws. We thought they were trying to, get around installing pollution control equipment on their plants. And so we filed suit against them and took them all the way to the Supreme Court and beat them 9-0 last year in the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So even we partner with people that we don't necessarily agree on everything with, but where we have an opportunity to talk and get a result, it's a lot faster to do that many times than to go through the litigation process, even though we still do litigate.
Mm-hmm.
The other key thing is in governmental policies, what we've learned is that the profit motive has gotten us into this fix, especially with global warming. When there's no limit on putting global warming pollution into the air, then people can make more money by doing the wrong thing. So what we've kind of wrapped our minds around and really advocated is then turning that profit motive upside down so that government rules that require the pollution to be squeezed out of the system will make it profitable to do solar energy, wind power, and all the other clean alternatives, or even to soak carbon dioxide emissions out of power plants, and make it more expensive to do the wrong thing. And that we really harness entrepreneurs and businesses to do the right thing when we have the right types of government rules in place. So that's the other way that we've tried to extend the environmental ethic right through the business community by getting this new type of rule set up.
Fred Krupp is with us, president of the Environmental Defense Fund, their website, environmentaldefense.org. Fred, take a minute here to update us on the TXU buyout. That's a big Texas utility. It went up on the block, and you and others got involved. And instead of just watching it get flipped to a bigger utility that would build more coal-fired power plants in Texas, and I believe that one was taken off the drawing board as part of the deal that you worked out. Could you give us a quick sketch of how that worked, and 18 months or so later, if you see that it's still operating or moving in the direction you had hoped?
Yes, well, TXU became, thanks to some of our advocacy and others in the environmental community, but with EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, really leading the charge, when they proposed 14 new coal-fired power plants, 11 in Texas and 3 in other places, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, we led the charge to make them the poster child of irresponsible behavior. We need to be lowering carbon emissions now, not increasing them. And as a result of partly of these fights over their plans to construct all these coal plants and other factors too, the Texas Pacific Group and KKR, two private equity firms, came in and began discussions with TXU about buying them out. But before they would consummate the deal, we got a call, and they said that they were going to make their buyout contingent on us and also NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, approving the sale. And I just about dropped the phone, I can tell you, because it was the largest buyout in the history of the American business community. But we negotiated actually right here in San Francisco. Our head global warming states action guy from Texas, Jim Marston, came here, and after a 17-hour marathon with NRDC and myself on the phone, we were able to get them to agree to cancel not one but 11 of the 14 power plants.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, 11 of the 14 were canceled permanently. They withdrew their application. They agreed to put $400 million into wind power, $400 million into energy efficiency, and they agreed to take their overall carbon footprint down below what it was in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And so we felt for sure these buyers were better than the existing ownership. And while we never approved the idea of those three remaining plants, you know, going forward, we did say that this overall package and the new owners were a lot better than the old owners.
Fred Krupp is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, you can call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-3-8372. And what is your take on the status of AB 32? That's Governor Schwarzenegger's signature effort to combat global warming. And it has empowered the California Air Resources Board to pass additional restrictions on, and there is an initial proposal for emissions charges that would be levied. I saw an article the other day that described the refineries and other polluters in Contra Costa County, just east of San Francisco on Suisun Bay, the charges that they would have to pay if they want to keep belching the same levels of CO2 and other greenhouse gases from their facilities. Do you see this moving forward in a positive way? And do you have any concerns about a Republican governor who is torn between clearly a sense of environmentalism with loyalty to the Chamber of Commerce and the Republican Party?
Well, I think the leaders in the state legislature and the governor deserve a lot of credit for passing AB 32. You know, California is an interesting state because private groups like mine and NRDC, the Environmental Defense Fund, EDF, and NRDC both co-sponsored AB 32. And we were delighted to see it pass. And, of course, we're always going to be concerned about the implementation until the last I is dotted and T is crossed, Peter. But I think it's moving very well. But what we really need is to get the whole United States economy under the same sort of global warming caps. We need to have mandatory limits on how much of this pollution can be put into the sky. And those limits need to be declining over time. So in Earth, the sequel, you know, my new book with Miriam Horn, The Race to Reinvent Energy and Stop Global Warming, in Earth, the sequel, we tell the story of we all know what's now with warming temperatures, melting glaciers, rising sea levels, dying coral reefs. The sequel is going to be how we reinvent the economy to get us out of this fix. And it's going to be partly using that profit motive that got us into this fix to make innovations like solar energy and wave energy, capturing carbon from the existing coal-fired plants while they're still in use. And it's going to be new sorts of advanced biofuels, not conventional ethanol. These are the inventions that are going to help us, but they're only going to be produced when government demands pollution come down. Peter, I remember I was here in writing the book interviewing an engineer down in Menlo Park named Eli Gal. Eli is an Israeli engineer. He was working for General Electric when the acid rain law was passed and figured out ways to make sulfur scrubbers much more efficient. And he told me he was working on a technology that could take CO2 out of coal-fired power plant smokestacks. And I looked at him skeptically saying, you can really do that? But, you know, how come it hasn't been done? He looked back at me and said, well, you know, the government hasn't asked. The government hasn't ever put any requirement that the carbon dioxide pollution be reduced. So it's not only solar energy and wind power, but all the innovation we need will happen. But it will only happen when each of us talks to our elected officials and gets the the Lieberman-Warner bill, or, you know, an even stronger bill, passed.
We're going to take a break and return with Fred Krupp. He's president of the Environmental Defense Fund and co-author of the new book, Earth, the Sequel. And he's got just a few more minutes, so he'll be with us on the other side of the break. Stay tuned for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
AllEachMounted.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong. Everybody,
AllEachMounted.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong.
AllEachMounted.com.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
We all have those questions, don't we, in our life? Questions about our living. It would be wise of us to be patient towards all that is unresolved in our heart and try to love the questions themselves. Too often we seek answers that can't be given to us because we would not be able to truly live them. And the point is, in this life, to live everything. To live the questions now. And perhaps gradually, without ever noticing it, we live along some distant day into the answer. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I invite you to be with me for my radio program on Saturday and Sundays at 9 a.m. here on KRXA. I hope you will take the time to join me and to aspire to your heart.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Good afternoon. We'll start you off in Soledad, southbound 101 after Arroyo Seco Road. An injury crash reported. Bobtail truck and a car involved. At this point, it's unknown if any lanes are blocked, although CHP is on the scene working to get that moved out of the way. Santa Cruz County up in Ben Lomond, El Soyo Drive at Manzanita Avenue. An accident where a garbage truck hit a tree. Looks like CHP is on the scene taking a report. Older crash in Hollister, Cienega Road at Union Road. A big rig overturned. It was hauling tires, so there's tires all over the roadway. Crews are clearing the tires out of the northbound lanes, and CHP doing traffic control at the scene. Expect delays. Highway 68 currently checking and installing accident-free, and 17 as you go through the Santa Cruz Mountains. We have no problems to tell you about. This is brought to you by Ace Hardware. Shop the dig into lawn and garden sale at your neighborhood Ace Hardware. Find expert help, friendly advice, and great deals. Hurry in. The sale is Wednesday through Monday at Ace, the helpful place. That's traffic, and I'm Nate Nix on KRXA.
B. It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Fred Krupp is with us, president of Environmental Defense Fund, on the web at environmentaldefense.org, co-author of the new book, Earth, the Sequel, The Race to Reinvent Energy and Stop Global Warming. And, Fred, I promised to let you go in a couple of minutes so you can get to your next meeting on time. But I wanted to just ask you briefly to tell us about a company called InnovaLight, which is revolutionizing solar energy with nanotechnology. I've been fascinated by nano for years.
InnovaLight is a very interesting company. The problem with solar cells is so far it's just been too expensive for everyone to put them on their roofs. Sometimes you have to put this whole glass box on, and it weighs a lot. So in places where there's snow, you risk the roof caving in. And it's just expensive otherwise. But InnovaLight has figured out a way to take the cheap silicon, not the expensive stuff that's in short supply because it's used in computer chips, liquefy it into paint, and then paint onto these roofing materials so the solar cells become the roof. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the very promising innovators working on a whole range of ideas that we talk about in the book. The breadth of invention, Peter, is just so exciting, whether it's InnovaLight or Amyris, which is figuring out how to trick yeast into making gasoline and even jet fuel, or the people working on wave power off the Olympic Peninsula, the guys working on geothermal energy who have figured out ways to make lukewarm water that is found in abandoned oil wells, among other places, turn that into electricity. This is the future. There's a whole lot of people working on it, but once the government passes Lieberman-Warner or a cap-and-trade bill that caps global warming pollution and mandates that the pollution has to go down, then the private capital really rushes into this alternative energy field and creates an abundance of alternatives.
Yeah. Well, Fred, it's a pleasure to meet you. We're going to get a copy of your book, and when I've had a chance to read it, I'll invite you back and we can talk some more.
I'd love to do it. Thanks,
all right,
Peter.
Fred Krupp, my pleasure. And again, he's president of Environmental Defense Fund, and their website is environmentaldefense.org. 25 minutes after the hour here, and just in view of Earth Day, I went to the corkboard on the other side of the room here, and just a little trip down memory lane. It was Earth Day of 2004 that I got my exclusive interview with then Secretary of the Interior, Gail Norton. And you know how the people from the government, the flacks, they try to set ground rules. They try to limit what a guy like me would ask about. And so, as I recall, she was touting something that she'd done at a lighthouse. I can't even remember exactly what it was. And also some talk about some wetlands that they were trying to protect and preserve. And so I let her talk about that stuff for a couple of minutes, and then I asked her a bunch of really tough questions. And she apparently was quite annoyed because the next day we got this email from her public affairs specialist. And it says, it's unfortunate that Mr. Collins was not interested in what the secretary had to say. His style was the epitome of ambush journalism, simply reading out loud charges from various op-ed columns and then demanding that the secretary answer to them. Small wonder you probably don't get many cabinet-level officials on your show. I am embarrassed that I associated my secretary with this program. Ah, well, we'll put that in the scrapbook. It's a badge of courage. Recommended reading today, Maureen Dowd's op-ed in the New York Times. And she snarkily hits Barack Obama a couple of times. But she's really got it in for Hillary. The Democrats are growing ever more desperate about the attack of the 50-foot woman. With the comically oblivious President Bush dancing around New Orleans, the city he let drown, and Condi sneaking in and out of Baghdad as rockets and mortars hail down on the green zone, beating the Republicans should be a cinch. But the Democrats watch in horror as Hillary continues to scratch up the once silvery sheen on Obama, and as John McCain not only consolidates his own party but encroaches on theirs by boldly venturing into Selma, Alabama on Monday. At the end of it, Maureen Dowd says that, she even wrote a little song. She said, before they devour themselves once more, perhaps the Democrats will take a cue from Dr. Seuss. Marvin K. Mooney, will you please go now? The writer once mischievously redid it for his friend Art Buchwald as Richard M. Nixon, will you please go now? They could sing in the chorus, the time has come, the time has come, the time is now. Just go, I don't care how. You can go by foot, you can go by cow. Hillary R. Clinton, will you please go now? You can go on skates, you can go on skis, you can go in an old blue show. Just go, go, go. Coming up next, a tearful letter from Carl Rove. He's been hurt by charges broadcast on television. We'll talk about it with Larissa Alexandroff. Now, next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Make it stop. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Every Monday, it's the same oil experts. Just add 16 cents to what they said last time.
Regular grade, it's up 16 cents in 2 weeks.
We will see $4 a gallon or very close to that.
Are we going to let this break our spirit? Are we going to let big oil jerk us around?
We went down to one car now, sold a car. We're actually moving closer to our work.
I have to get around. There's nothing I can really do about it. I don't have a job where I can take the bus every day. If I did, I would.
Apparently so. Pathetic. Is there no one willing to take a stand?
I'm not ready to pay another 10 cents a gallon.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I wish the semis wouldn't drive and protest some of this.
There you go. That's more like it. We need protests. We need truckers to park their rigs, refuse to deliver food so we can show those oil companies who's boss by starving. And why are gas prices never going to go down again? Because countries like China and India are moving into the middle class. That's what we're told. They want to emulate the American middle class lifestyle, and they need gas to do it. Well, say it with me, people. Who invented the American middle-class lifestyle?
America!
Darn straight. And what do we tell non-Americans who want to copy the American middle-class lifestyle?
You can't!
Exactly, because that would be lifestyle piracy.
Shame on you!
We're the ones who got the idea to live in the suburbs and commute to the cities in large, stereo-equipped vehicles. If you want to copy a lifestyle, copy Europe. Live in skinny little apartment buildings next to train stations and take cute buses powered by goat milk or whatever fuel they're producing over there these days. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Ladies and gentlemen, this next half hour, you're going to learn that Karl Rove is a sensitive human being. He has feelings. I recommend you grab a box of tissues or your favorite hanky. It's going to be a tearjerker. The Peter B. Collins Show is sponsored by Polly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's new book about Reverend Moon and his slimy newspaper, The Washington Times. Gorenfeld's book is Bad Moon Rising. Get a preview and check out the coziness between the Bush family and Reverend Moon at thekingofamerica.com. That's www.thekingofamerica.com. Larissa Alexandrovna is the managing editor for investigations at rawstory.com, and in between visits to Mississippi and Alabama, she checks in with us. Hello, Larissa.
Hello.
It's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
And as I alerted people in the intro here, I have in my hot little hands a six-page letter from Karl Rove to Dan Abrams, dated April 13th. And it's all your fault.
Well, I don't know if it's all my fault.
You started this. I'm blaming you. It's that five-part series at rawstory.com that started with the case of Don Siegelman and that deeply implicates Karl Rove, and he's hurt by that.
Yes, he is. He's not only hurt, he's really in a panic because... I'm sure you've told your listeners by now, but he, you know, he has now declined to testify in front of John Conyers' committee, the House Judiciary Committee, in the investigation on selective prosecutions. And the argument he's using is that he's protected by the executive.
He don't work there no more.
Well, aside from that, you can't claim executive privilege, which is absurd in any case, but then go on to write a five-page letter discussing the very thing you say you cannot talk about.
Well, it has 57 questions in it. I counted.
Well, and you know, he's nothing if not meticulous, so he really put a lot of thought and effort into this, obviously.
Well, it's a roadmap for his future testimony.
What testimony? It doesn't answer anything. It asks Dan Abrams. I've got a little overly friendly there. I don't know Mr. Abrams.
I don't either.
He asks, you know, he asks Dan Abrams, basically, did you ask this of these people? No, Dan Abrams obviously is just taking their word for it. You know, he didn't think to ask them any of the people these questions, and Rove even attacks Scott Horton, who has been reporting on this, as though Scott Horton needed to be investigated by Dan Abrams.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me just tell you, like you, I've never met Dan Abrams. I've watched him on television, and I see him as a bit of an opportunist.
Yeah, I agree with you.
He has a legal background, and the show he used to do was kind of on the Nancy Grace side. It was kind of the crime du jour, and how can we convict them before the jury gets impaneled, and that kind of thing. And it should be revealed, too, that Dan Abrams is the boss at MSNBC. In a shuffle about a year and a half ago, he gave up his daily show and then became the manager or president of whatever they call that operation.
But still kept his but now has his daily show again.
And now he's back, and he has been trending a little left, doing more political stories, challenging the Bush administration. And to his credit, he's done several segments on the Siegelman case and has asked a lot of the right questions.
But only so he can say it looks like, to me anyway, that Siegelman's release was a direct result of him asking, did Siegelman be released?
Yeah.
which he says over and over and over. And that kind of bothers me, the fact that he doesn't really, you know, when Scott Horton's been on, I've noticed that he doesn't introduce him as one of the two people in this country who's been reporting this. He introduces him as a law professor, which Horton is anyway. Yes, that's true. Uh-huh. But doesn't go into explaining why Horton is relevant to the panel. You know, as for me, he never mentions me. He said things like the 60 Minutes on the Siegelman case was a direct result of, you know, his show.
Mm-hmm.
It's absurd. But so I agree, he's an opportunist.
Yeah.
Yes.
And has there been any reference to Raw Story or your reportage in the MSNBC coverage to date?
No, but they haven't credited Harper's either.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't credited anyone. And if you recall, it was MSNBC that took credit for the Play Me Wrong scoop, too. I mean, you know, they should just wait, let me deliver the... I could just have things faxed directly to them and, you know, not bother them.
Well, but, maybe you should put in for, you know, pay as a news writer or a researcher there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into, you know, my background screaming matches over the fact that they claimed that the, you know, they broke the Play Me Wrong story, but mm-hmm. there were plenty.
Yeah. Larissa's with us, Larissa Alexandrovna. If you have a question or comment about these issues, feel free to give us a call. She's with us till the top of the hour, 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free, 888-573-8372. So in this lengthy letter, and it really, you know, I'm mocking Karl Rove here by talking about his feelings, but...
Well, I did, too. I wrote a whole thing about him saying I'm not a monster.
Yeah, yeah. But I do think it's a very interesting snapshot of him now that he is no longer working in the White House, because for the most part, he just stonewalled everything that occurred before he left the White House. The irony that you pointed out, that he's unavailable to testify before the Conyers Committee, but can use GQ or the National Review to mm-hmm. propel his point of view out there.
Well, not even the National Review, but Powerline Blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but you were saying I interrupted.
Well, go ahead and trace that back, because I found his letter at National Review Online, but it may have started at Powerline. I know that's one of his favorite drop zones.
Well, I think the reason we're seeing, and I think you're right to say since he's left the White House, the reason we're seeing him acting this way is not because he's didn't act this way before, but before he had plenty of people willing proxies for him in the press. Now, you know, the GQ piece, which was laughable at best, in which he makes allegations that nobody made, but he, you know, sets up the straw man and then proceeds to destroy the straw man, you know, the favorite tactic of his. He's now down to two outlets. He's GQ, who I think the readers there probably turn to the, you know, pictures,
mm-hmm.
probably, before they turn to the articles. And certainly I doubt any of them are, you know, sitting around going, ooh, an interview with Karl Rove, even though we've had him for how many years now? I really want to read this. It didn't get a lot of play, from what I understand. That's A. B, he then, the only other outlet is Powerline Blog. And since, you know, those guys are salivating at the opportunity to seem somehow important enough to get Karl Rove's endorsement,
mm-hmm.
even they, however, didn't get the kind of play from this you'd normally see, where, you know, you start to see the vultures circling and the, as though in one big cry, everyone suddenly all starts saying the same talking point over and over.
Right.
None of that happened, even with, so he's down to like zero, really, outlets. And that's why you see him actually penning a letter himself, because I don't think anybody would do it for him.
Yeah, like, you know, Judith Miller can't get him published anymore. Matt Cooper probably doesn't return his phone calls.
Well, he couldn't find a publisher for his book.
Really?
Yeah.
So Gonzalez can't find a job. Rove can't find a publisher.
Right.
This is pretty interesting.
Well, you know, justice is... Am I allowed to say the B word on the radio?
A bitch?
Yeah, okay, back is a bitch. honestly, of all the scandals, and, you know, I remember when the U.S. attorney scandal broke, and I kept looking and saying, you know, I think we need to look at the U.S. attorneys left behind. I kept saying and arguing with people who know Roe better, you know, fairly well. I mean, better than I do, certainly, and I don't know him at all, but, you know, people who are close to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept arguing, saying, oh, this is, I think this is it. This is the end of the road. And they kept saying, this isn't going to get any traction. And I am telling you that this is the likely scandal that's going to take him down.
Mm-hmm.
And am I cheering about this? Yes. And I don't care, you know, I'm not going to hide my, I'm not cheering in my articles, but
uh-huh.
outside of my articles, I'm absolutely cheering because, you know, I believe in justice.
Well, and he's over there as a fair and balanced commentator at the Fox News channel now, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's a, well, at Fox News, he's probably one of the more rational ones, that's true, but, he's never been balanced, from what I've heard of, you know, from people in Texas who were there at the beginning. I mean, the guy, the stories I've heard paints him far from balanced.
Larissa is with us here, and here's a question posed by a caller. What's the best place to find this letter? I found it at the National Review online. It's a place called The Corner.
Well, Dan Abrams posted that letter in his response on the MSNBC part of the site for his show.
Oh, okay. That's another place where people can find it. Now, Larissa, I did go through, and I might be off by one or two, but I identified 57 questions that Karl Rove posed to Dan Abrams in this lengthy letter. And about 37 of them have to do with trying to undercut the credibility of Dana Jill Simpson.
Yep.
Recap for our listeners that this is a Republican who decided that after Don Siegelman went to jail and she saw the way the U.S. attorneys had operated and the games that were being played, that she felt an obligation to come forward. And he is trying to destroy her.
Right. And he's alone now because the Alabama Democrats Republicans are not helping him anymore. They're done. I think they've likely been told by their consultants that if they want to, you know, they need to focus on winning their own elections. This is not for them to play with.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is he's tried to enlist their help in going after her. And, you know, there aren't any takers. He's afraid of her because here's someone who testified under oath, which is not something he's willing to do,
right. And
basically said, Karl Rove was involved in this, and this is how I know. On top of that, my guess is, and if I were in her position, I probably would have kept some insurance. You know, if that were me, I probably would have had some insurance stashed away just in case.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So he probably, in my opinion, looking at his letter, is on a fishing expedition.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know, my guess, is what she has before he testified.
Well, and here's an example that I think illustrates that. This is from early in Karl Rove's letter to Dan Abrams. Didn't it strike you as foolish for me to ask someone with no particular experience to undertake a task requiring adroit surveillance and shadowing skills, a mission with such potential to blow up in everyone's faces? Now, this is really revealing. It suggests that he has cast about and hired people for that kind of subcontractor role in the past.
That's right.
And that Dana Jill Simpson simply wouldn't measure up to his spooky standards.
Right, exactly. Yep, exactly. And
all right, indulge me one more here. Then
take as many as you want.
Then,
I love these things.
Then consider Ms. Simpson's September 14, 2007 interview with the House Judiciary Committee that followed an earlier extensive interview by a Democratic committee lawyer. Did it not bother you? Ms. Simpson failed to mention the claim she made to CBS for their interview in February that she then repeated the next day. After all, wouldn't that be something Congressman John Conyers' people would find interesting? Well, Carl, what they'd really find interesting, Carl, is for you to come and testify under oath.
Right, but here's what I know why that wasn't asked at the formal hearing, because the attorneys during the pre-hearing interview never asked her. And even though she tried to go there, they didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that she, you know, suddenly came up with a new thing. And I might also add that when I was there in Alabama last year, this is before people knew I was there.
Okay.
Now everyone knows I've been there. But
yes, we do.
You know, and Scott Horton, who was also there, he and I had discussed this. We both interviewed her, I mean, on separate occasions and not together, but and she told us the same exact thing. So the claim that she suddenly has this new allegation is nonsense, because I can attest to knowing about it a long time ago, and so can Horton.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think Horton says he knew about it over the summer, and then I learned about it on my visit, my first visit there. So that's, you know, he leaves that out. He, you know, he cites Horton, or he goes on attacking Horton,
mm-hmm.
but he leaves out himself what Horton's already said about this testimony.
Yeah, we got to take a break. We'll resume in just a moment with Larissa Alexandrovna. Lines open if you have a question. 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and it's definitely calmed down since our last report. Santa Cruz, our only new problem, Granite Creek Road at Celeste Way, a broken down pickup truck, that's blocking one of the lanes. For Soledad, South 101 after Arroyo Seco Road, an older injury crash, that should be in the final clearing stages now, off to the shoulder. Bobtail truck and a car involved there, possible slow traffic as you approach the scene. Just a heads up, northbound 1 at 12th Street, we had reports of a car on fire. Fire department got there. That turned out not to be the case, but there may be some heavy traffic looking at the action off to the side there. And northbound 1 east of the San Lorenzo River Bridge, we had reports of somebody walking a bicycle getting a little too close to the lane, so drive with caution there as well. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a new study from Carfax shows that a number of salvaged cars for sale in the United States has more than doubled? Ask your used car dealer for a free car vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic. I'm Nate Nix on KRXA.
Spring has sprung at All Class Transportation, and the All Class Transportation team is offering awesome spring savings to KRXA listeners for all of April. Call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338 to travel in the ultimate in comfort and style. For example, a party of eight can rent an All Class Transportation luxury limo for the bargain basement price of only $55 an hour. That's right, folks. I said only $55 per hour with a one-hour minimum. All Class Transportation also has luxury SUVs and sedans for even less, and again, with a minimum time of just 1 hour. If you are looking for an airport drop-off or pickup in Monterey or San Jose at a great price, look no further than All Class Transportation. For additional information, call the All Class Transportation team at 831-582-9338 or email them at allclasstrans@att.net. Times are yard to yard. Gratuity is not included. And vehicles will be rented subject to availability. Remember, for all your transportation needs, call Marina-based All Class Transportation, TCP 22978-A at 582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Newsflash just in. Now through April 30th, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, All Class Transportation is only $50 per hour with a one-hour minimum for an eight-passenger luxury limo. Wow, unbelievable. Call now and reserve your limo before it's too late. All Class Transportation, 582-9338.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Our music of the moment is from the Boomtown Rats. It's called Whitehall 1212. And that's the phone number of Scotland Yard. So if you're in London and you see a crime, call Whitehall 1212. If you're in Alabama, just kind of keep it to yourself. Larissa Alexandrovna with us from RawStory.com, and she, as she mentioned, along with Scott Horton of Harper's, clearly have their fingerprints all over this, and Karl Rove has dusted for them.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh so loud.
And we're working our way through this very emotional letter that Karl wrote to Dan Abrams at MSNBC. One more emotional comment here. In fact, it seems you believe that the absence of any concrete evidence is itself evidence of the conspiracy. If you don't have any proof Karl Rove did it, that absence is proof enough. I am that good. Now, this is insight into the whole Saddam thing. There was no concrete evidence, and that was the evidence that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. And that's how good he is.
That's right. Well, I'm not sure if Rove is almost not smirking when he wrote that. I could see him smirking as he sat there and wrote that part.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he's that good, but that's really the truth of the matter is that outside of any other people, all the people that I've interviewed, all the people that Scott Horton's interviewed, the people that 60 Minutes has interviewed, you take all those people out, you still have enough evidence. You still have the relationship between Karl Rove and Bill Canary, who is the was Don Siegelman's campaign opponent's advisor on his campaign, and who happens to be the husband of the U.S. attorney who indicted Rove.
Mm-hmm.
You have a relationship of Rove and Canary going back. We've tracked it as far back as 1994. You have activities in the White House where Rove is actively helping raise money for Bob Riley.
Wait a minute. Here's his comment. As a matter of fact, I had other things to occupy my time in the White House in 2002 rather than structuring a campaign for an Alabama gubernatorial candidate, calling people to raise money, and going through the arduous task of putting together a strategy. And I certainly didn't meet with anyone of the Justice Department or either of the two U.S. attorneys in Alabama about investigating or indicting Siegelman.
Nobody said he did.
Right.
Nobody said he met with the U.S. attorneys.
That's right.
What the allegation is that he spoke with the U.S. attorney's husband, his longtime friend. that's basically the allegation. And what he says is he didn't take notice of the campaign. It was the largest single fundraiser for any governor that the White House ever did.
Well, he admits that tangentially. My involvement in the campaign was to approve a request that the president appear at a Riley fundraising event, one of several score fundraising events the president did that election cycle.
Really? Who? Come on, you can tell us. And what really bugs me is that Dan Abrams' response to this is to say, I'm not relying entirely on Dana Jill Simpson's testimony, which take her out, take everybody else out of the equation, you still have plenty of circumstantial, if not direct, evidence. I mean, stuff going back to certain other people, like the guy who sealed the ballots in the election.
To steal the election from Siegelman.
Right. Mm-hmm. Being appointed in a recess appointment to the 11th Circuit.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
His name didn't show up on Bush's desk on its own. Karl Rove would have had to approve it as the political guru or whatever it is that he does.
Here's a comment from Dave in Eureka. Hi, Dave. You're on the air with Larissa.
Hey, Peter and Larissa. I'm just back in Humboldt after a few weeks away. I've missed you guys most of the time. But I think that Karl Rove, despite his rather ruthless disregard for the harm that he inflicts on others, gets ever so sensitive when it is himself on the receiving end, a little bit of verbal abuse.
Isn't that so interesting?
It reminds me of all bullies I've known. They're usually bullying because they are so fragile.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
You know.
Thank you, guys.
Dave, good to have you back. Well, Larissa, thank you for joining us today. And
sure.
Keep us posted on any further developments here.
Okay.
And is there anything we should be watching for?
Yes, part six.
Part six?
Mm-hmm.
Do...
Well, I don't know. Excuse me.
Ooh, bless you.
Thank you. Oh, my, I think I think in a week or so you'll see it.
All right. Real good. And if Carl calls, let us know right away.
I will.
Okay, Larissa, take care.
Okay, well, bye.
Larissa from RawStory.com. We're going to take a break and return with California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We'll talk about the budget problem in Sacramento and whether he supports Deborah Bowen challenging the electronic voting machines and Jerry Brown challenging the federal government over tailpipe emissions. That's next.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. People are asking with more and more anger and frustration what the blinkety is going on at the gas pump. Here's a Cincinnati driver.
$3 is one thing, and now all of a sudden $3.60 overnight, you know? I mean, it's just mind-boggling that things are getting up towards $4 a gallon.
And tough when experts tell us there's no hard supply and demand reason for it. In fact, demand is down. We are using less gasoline. Everything seems to be getting more expensive.
There's a vending machine at work, and everything used to be 75 cents, and now it's a dollar. And, yeah, just everything's gone up.
Oil today closed above $118 a barrel, but it was in 120 territory during the trading day. Commodity prices have been going up and up, led by gasoline. Much of it can be blamed on speculators out to make a quick buck. Now it's rice, because the world is increasingly hungry.
Rice is a commodity like many other commodities right now, and traders seem to be bidding them up, partly as a hedge against the falling dollar. There is increased demand, but we're told there's no actual shortage of rice, although there is growing demand.
CBS's John Blackstone says some big box stores are limiting the amount of rice you can buy at one time. No word what's behind it yet, but in Chicago, police say five bodies have been found in a house on the south side, cause of death unknown, though they do say they don't think an offender is on the loose. Want to know how to make $1 million? Get into the airline business and start with two. It's an old, not-so-funny joke about how hard it is to make it. Now they say, believe it.
Delta CEO says that they're going to have to raise their ticket prices probably about 15% just to break even with the cost of jet fuel. So on top of their other organizational problems, they've got these huge fuel costs to contend with. And it seems pretty evident that they're going to pass those costs on to the consumer.
CBS's Manuel Gallegos says Delta and Northwest, merger-bound, posted losses of $10.5 billion for the first 3 months of this year. The House, by a veto-proof margin, has passed a bill that would leave in $13 billion in Medicaid spending the Bush plan would have cut. CBS's Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill.
The overwhelming House vote comes despite a veto threat from President Bush and reflects strong opposition to those Medicaid rules from governors and health care providers. The Bush administration says the new rules would save money and make sure Medicaid isn't paying more than it should for health care for the poor. States say they simply would dump more of the cost in their laps and they can't afford it.
The Grateful Dead leaves a huge musical legacy of live performances, and the surviving members of the band have agreed to turn over their archives to the University of California at Santa Cruz. It's a collection of correspondence and other memorabilia they'll be getting. The music is in a separate collection, subject to other marketing plans, of course. On Wall Street, the Dow up 43 points, and NASDAQ was up about 28. This is CBS News.
It's time to turn off our TVs and turn on our senses. Time to dial up the daisies and kickstart the chrysanthemums. Time to uncoil the hoses and unleash the roses. With Liquifeed Advance, the new feeder and liquid plant food from Miracle-Gro makes feeding your plants as easy as watering and helps you remember there's a big, beautiful world out there. Miracle-Gro, it's grow time. This weekend, get to the Home Depot and get growing.
Have you ever wanted to own a Mercedes-Benz but felt that it was out of reach? Well, you're in luck, because right now Mercedes-Benz is having a certified pre-owned event with special financing on a wide selection of exceptional pre-owned vehicles like the Agile C-Class, the legendary E-Class, the sturdy M-Class, and the spacious R-Class. The Mercedes-Benz certified pre-owned event now through April 30th. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes dealer, it's not a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details on warranty coverage and roadside assistance.
So-called super pills to fight addictions may not be all they're cracked up to be. CBS's Dan Raviv says it really could be a bummer of a situation.
A researcher at the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse says his enthusiasm for these super pills has been diminished by reports of psychiatric issues, even the risk of suicide some doctors blame on these pills, launched with great fanfare about 4 years ago, meant to block our brain's pleasure centers so we could quit smoking, quit using cocaine, even stop being addicted to food. Blocking pleasure might cause depression. Dan Raviv, CBS News.
The only wrestling in this jello was by drivers trying to get their cars through the mess in Jacksonville, Florida. A truck driver was taken to a hospital, non-life-threatening injuries, after his big rig flipped and splattered individual packs of jello all over I-95. That driver was trapped for a while in his mangled truck. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
I was diagnosed with diabetes. My doctor was a huge help. But I was still anxious, and I found myself wanting even more information.
Only Aetna members have access to Aetna Navigator, a secure online resource that enables members to check the status of their claims and provides information on everything from wellness to diabetes, as well as procedure costs and hospital quality ratings.
Now I feel like I'm in control of my diabetes, instead of it controlling me.
We want you to know. Aetna. To learn more, go to Aetna.com.
Plans offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company. Health insurance plans contain exclusions and limitations.
Brace yourselves, because I'm going to bring up a subject nobody likes to think about. Buying a used car. I know, painful. Well, I've got a painless solution. Honda Certified Used Cars. Their well-maintained late-model Hondas each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with a 7-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. They'll even provide a Carfax vehicle history report. Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
As we head into the free speech zone today.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn-out shoes.
I haven't heard this in ages.
Silver hair and ragged shirt and baggy pants. The old soft shoe. Jumped so high. Jumped so high. And then it lightly touched down. I met him in a sail in New Orleans. I was.
You can sing along. Nobody will catch you.
Said his name, Bojangles, and he danced a lick.
That goes way back to Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Across the cell.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to join this conversation. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8255. 8372. We're currently tracking down California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We'll get him on the air here as soon as we reach him. Our program is sponsored by PolyPoint Press and John Gorenfeld's new book, Bad Moon Rising. If you've ever been to Washington and picked up the Washington Times newspaper, well, it looks respectable, but when you actually read the words in there, you find out what a propaganda organ it is. And it's owned by Reverend Sung Myung Moon. And Bad Moon Rising is all about Reverend Moon and some of his political connections, including to the Bush family. Visit the website, thekingofamerica.com. There's a great video there, about 15 minutes long, and it'll open your eyes about Reverend Moon and the cast of characters who support him in Washington. So that's what's going on there, thekingofamerica.com. And we just got word that the Lieutenant Governor will be able to join us in about half an hour. He's on a flight right now, so we'll catch up with him a little bit later in the program. Joining me now is Sarah Hale Merriam. She has been in Pennsylvania over the last period of time, and she's specifically been focused on some of the issues there about the conduct of the election. Sarah, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you.
It's good to talk with you. And we follow the action on elections here on this program through Brad Blog. Are you familiar with Brad's blog?
I am familiar with it. I was actually on it earlier today.
Well, good, because he captured as much information as he could from various sources, official and non-official, in Pennsylvania on the big primary day yesterday. And you have some kind of first-person accounts that you can add to it from your own observations and reporting that you've done talking to people over the last 24 hours. And if you were to give a letter grade to the credibility of the primary election in Pennsylvania yesterday, what would it be?
I would flunk it, because in all honesty, if so long as we aren't taking every necessary precaution to ensure that the process is legitimate, then there's no way to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I give it a big F.
Well, and as we know from talking with Brad, one of the big issues here is that Pennsylvania is almost entirely conducting its elections on touchscreen voting machines. And those machines are hackable. Without a paper trail, there isn't even any way to verify that the vote you saw on the screen is the same vote that got counted in the machine's memory.
Yeah. And even further than that, the machines, and I spoke to dozens of voters yesterday who went to go to their polling precincts to cast their votes, and the machines were either not working or they weren't registering votes. And so I spoke to one woman in particular who mentioned that she kept on trying to have her vote register, and it wasn't going through, and so she alerted a polling captain or someone at the precinct, and they told her that this had been a problem that had persisted throughout the day. And so the idea of votes not registering, given what we know about these machines, is also really kind of mind-boggling. It really discredits the validity of the final count, in that, you know, we're hearing that throughout the day the votes weren't being registered at all.
And Sarah, from viewing the media, television in particular, my impression is that there's deep denial in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Governor Rendell was interviewed. We played a clip on the show last Friday. And also Mayor Nutting, I think is his name, of Philadelphia. And they both just downplayed the whole issue. No problem. I think Nutting said, is it Nutting or Nutter?
Nutter.
Yeah, sorry. He said, well, I got elected on these machines.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's why they're able to be so kind of comfortable with them. They were able to get through that system, and so it doesn't necessarily concern them.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let me give you a couple of minutes here and describe for our listeners some of the anomalies, the problems that occurred, and also irate voters who felt that for one reason or another they were barred from voting or they cast a ballot that probably isn't going to be counted.
Okay. I think I'll start off with probably as far as I'm concerned, the most egregious thing I heard, and that was a man probably in his mid-50s who has been a registered Democrat for the last 28 years, who went to go to vote in the same location he's been going to every single year, and was told that he had failed to renew his affiliation with the Democratic Party and was therefore unable to vote. Now, I'm not sure if I'm missing something, but I was under the impression that this wasn't some sort of, you know, club where you had to renew your status in a party, and so that was very
It's not like Costco.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and this is interesting because one of the techniques that we have seen Republicans use has a name. It's called voter caging, and the system is that you contact somebody and who's on the voter rolls, and you send them a notice, and if they don't respond to it, then you challenge whether they still live at that address, and you go to the registrar and try to get them taken off the voting rolls. And this is a technique that has been used to suppress the vote. They've used other techniques to suppress turnout, but this is intended to essentially eliminate a legitimate voter's right to participate in a particular election. And it's stunning when you see it happening to Democrats in a Democratic primary.
Yeah, it was that particular technique was widespread from what I kept on hearing. I spoke to numerous individuals who went to go vote and were told that they weren't registered. It, more often than not, because I continued to inquire as to whether or not they received a provisional ballot, they had not been given a provisional ballot. So they weren't even given the opportunity to contest the fact that they weren't registered. And I also spoke to a few people here and there, and I heard stories from people with friends who switched their party affiliation either from independents or from Republicans to be told that they would not register Democrats despite the fact that they had switched it prior to March 23rd, I believe, was the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And they were either told that they were still listed as unaffiliated or that they were still listed in some cases as Republican, so they were unable to vote.
Yeah. Now, here's a story at Bradblog from the Times Chronicle in Pennsylvania. It reports a Montgomery County judge on Tuesday evening turned down a request by a county Democratic committee to extend voting hours after some problems developed at the polls. Voters were unable to use an electronic voting machine until 2.5 hours after the poll opened. In the 4-1 ward in Cheltenham, problems were reported with both electronic machines, with both of the machines assigned to that polling place shortly after the polls opened at 7 in the morning, and there were about 200 people in line at that time, and it took until 11 a.m. for a replacement machine to be delivered. And it's unclear poll workers offered emergency ballots to those initial would-be voters who couldn't wait for a machine or couldn't return to vote. However, those at the polls said the offer of emergency ballots came too late for many who were angry and stormed out, claiming they had to get to work or go out of town. Only some 60 to 70 emergency ballots were filled out, which suggests that somewhere between 120 and 140 people chose, you know, not to wait in order to try to cast their ballot.
Yeah, and I mean, I came across that article as well, and I actually spoke with a woman whose friend was one of those people in line, and this was happening throughout the state of Pennsylvania, or at least I shouldn't even say that, throughout Western Philly, where I was located in the surrounding counties,
mm-hmm.
where people were going to vote, and the machines were just broken, and so, you know, lines were building up, and I remember at one point I spoke to a woman, because there was a lot of buzz going on throughout. I was going door to door, and the people even there were asking me, you know, I heard on the local news that there were three different polling locations where all of the electronic voting machines were broken. Do you know about this? What can I do about it? And I was kind of at a loss for what to tell them, because at that point, the machines are broken. You know, it's all kind of hearsay. And you know, it's kind of new to expect it going in, just because we know that there's problems with these machines. Obviously, they're unverifiable. And we also know that the machines themselves broke in New Jersey. I'm stationed in New York. They broke in New York. I don't understand why we continue to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in itself disenfranchised a lot of voters. And it was really disheartening to go to these people's homes and to see that, you know, their enthusiasm to go out and cast their ballots. Many of these people, for the first time in years, was kind of, you know, dumbed down by the logistics of the electoral process, and it shouldn't be that way. We're a representative democracy. We're supposed to be able to vote for our elected officials, and we're supposed to be able to exercise our right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that so many people were willing to engage that right and were unable to is just disastrous, and it needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Sarah, are any people responding to the problems from yesterday by signing affidavits or petitions regarding what they feel was, you know, not being able to vote in one way or another?
my understanding was that the people in Montgomery County signed a petition, which, as you said, the judge kind of just threw out. Other than that, I told people to call various campaigns or to try and call the Board of Elections. There isn't a systematic, you know, centralized location to really send them to. And so people are trying to figure out how to address the issue, but I think more can be done. And I think that if they were given a direct outlet, that the stories that would emerge from that regarding all of the irregularities that occurred throughout yesterday would just be really overwhelming. If Western Philadelphia is any indication of the rest of the state, then, you know, I think the kind of stuff that mainstream media should be covering.
Yeah. And, Sarah, just one final question. In your view, and this is clearly subjective, but from all the people you've talked to and the information you've gathered, were those who had problems voting or who were denied their ability to vote, were they largely supporting one candidate or the other?
Yes, and I'm absolutely positive of this fact. In Western Philadelphia, it was primarily Obama supporters that were being affected. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that there weren't some Clinton supporters in the mix, but the entire area that I was in was overwhelmingly supporting Senator Obama, and so that they were all hit pretty hard.
Sarah Hale Merriam, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, nice to talk with you. Lines are open for you now, the free speech zone for the remainder of the hour. At some point, we may hear from the lieutenant governor, but we won't count on that. I want to count on you. Call me now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Talk about the Pennsylvania election, the single-digit victory of Senator Clinton. 9.2% is not double-digit, by the way. It was a single-digit victory. And anything else you want to bring up that we've talked about today, or maybe something we haven't, my lines are open and so are my ears. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
My name is Todd Hornick, and I'm a candidate in the June 3rd election for Monterey County Superior Court Judge. As a prosecutor for 17 years, I represent you in court nearly every day. In fact, I have more Monterey County courtroom experience than all my opponents combined. I'm asking you to join with the great majority of Monterey County law enforcement associations who are supporting me, Todd Hornick, because of my commitment to victims' rights, a safe community, and the orderly administration of justice. Ask yourself, what makes a good judge? It takes knowledge of the law, the system, a sense of fairness, and the ability to treat every case as unique as the person standing in the courtroom. Judges see hundreds of cases each month, and each one requires the judge's full attention. And I can commit to serving this community for decades to come. I'm Todd Hornick, and I have all the necessary skills and abilities and represent your best choice for Monterey County Superior Court Judge, beyond a reasonable doubt. Learn more at ToddHornickForJudge.com.
Hi, this is Paul.
And Cynthia.
Of the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden. And we'd like to thank you for supporting this locally owned and operated Carmel business for nearly 40 years.
Nestled in Carmel by the Sea, the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden occupy a beautiful space on Dolores between 5th and 6th, showcasing an array of books on local interests, new releases, bestsellers, novels, children's, metaphysical, and much more. Plus, you'll enjoy taking a good look at our music, healing tools, cards, statuary, fountains, and more.
Proud to be a part of the Carmel business community, we invite you to see us soon.
Pilgrim's Way offers one-on-one intuitive counseling in the bookstore. You may call ahead for an appointment or just walk in. Whether you're a local resident or a visitor to our beautiful peninsula, we have something for everyone.
The Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, between 5th and 6th on Dolores.
Discover an imaginative adventure. Pick up a good read at the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and pretty quiet right now. We had an earlier accident that was southbound 101 at Arroyo Seco Road. It looks like the left lane may still be blocked out there with emergency crews conducting an investigation. 152 at Holsklaw Road, an earlier accident was involved with a car that went off the roadway. It was being pursued by the local sheriff's department. That's in the final clearing stages. Granite Creek Road at Celeste Way in Santa Cruz, broken down pickup truck blocking a lane. You have CHP on the scene. And 152 east of Casa de Fruta Parkway on the Pacheco Pass. We have a dog that's walking in the lane, so drive with caution there. Highway 17, no stalls and no accidents. Slow traffic south 17 onto southbound 1. This is brought to you by Act Restoring Mouthwash. Act Restoring Mouthwash is a three-act mouthwash. Act 1 kills germs. Act 2 restores minerals to soft spots. And Act 3 strengthens tooth enamel up to two times harder. Be sure to get Act Restoring Mouthwash. If you spot a traffic problem, let us know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're taking your calls in the free speech zone. I've got lines available if you want to get on that fancy cell phone and call toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. Come on, sing it out, Eddie. Belt it for me. Thanks for riding home with me in the Peter B. Collins Express here today. 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to call the program. We're not sure if we'll get to the Lieutenant Governor today. He had some travel that has interrupted our scheduling, so I'm not sure he'll talk with us. But I wanted to raise an issue that's fundamental. The budget gap in Sacramento is now pegged at $14 billion. But it is inordinately dependent on property taxes. Property values are going down fast. Many people, like Larry Ellison, the billionaire from Oracle, are applying to get their appraised value lower, which lowers the tax payments they're required to make. And the foreclosure rate in the first quarter in the Bay Area was up 300% from last year. In Santa Clara County, a 471% increase. Solano County, 357%. Sonoma, 472%. Napa, 387% increase in foreclosures over last year. That means there are more and more properties that won't be paying taxes or won't be paying as much as they did before. My question is simple. When are we going to blow up Proposition 13 and properly tax, fairly tax, homeowners and other property owners in California? Want to bite on that? I'd like to hear your comment. 888-5-PETER-B. Ben and Salinas, you're up first here in the Free Speed Zone. Hi, Ben.
You know what, Peter Collins? I've got the hackles going up on the back of my neck, and I want you to tell me if I'm wrong if I'm being Chicken Little here.
Right.
We have a Mr. Bush, some call him president, who lives in the world of the haves and the have-mores. He refuses to do anything, and they manipulate the spigot for fuel in Iran. It's all about control and manipulation of the spigot. But now you add the component where the big stores, big box stores, are refusing to sell quantities of rice. Peter Collins, what the hell is going to to happen when we have our first food riot in some inner city where there's actual shortages. We know there are many homeless and hungry people on the streets, but you add to the component of about 11 million people being put on the streets by these foreclosure manipulators,
right.
Nobody going to prison, nobody getting fired in the FDA, nobody getting fired in the Agriculture Department, conspiring with the petroleum industry to create these shortages. Bush ain't going to do nothing. They're not controlling the offshore sale of wheat and foodstuffs here. You add the component of food riots to this gas going up between $5 and $10 dollars a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your scenario for martial law because of food riots. Am I the only clown that's not getting it out here?
Ben, you know, as always, you call and you make very powerful, passionate points. And if I had a way of dismissing, rejecting, or proving you wrong, I would do it, if only, you know, to make the conversation interesting. But I can't. I can't refute what you have said. The linkage between oil prices going up, the price at the pump, the move to biofuels that drive up the cost of basic foodstuffs, it's a very ugly cycle. It could lead where you're talking about. And, yes, we are prepared for martial law.
And impeachment is off the table? Holy
right.
cow!
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Barack Obama for America, Barack Obama for America. His wisdom, courage, and integrity will give us peace and strong prosperity. Our people need a new direction, security and health protection. With global warming creeping upon us, a president that we can trust. Barack Obama for America. Barack Obama for America.
America needs Barack Obama. I'm Joan Hopkins, and I wrote this song. Help us play it on radio stations across the country. Go to deltawavepress.com or call me at 831-659-2086 to help America.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's a pizza paradise where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We're in the free speed zone. Your calls and comments, welcome. 888-5 Peter B. Our program originates in San Francisco during daylight hours, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. And it plays at night and on the weekends all over the place. People are podcasting every minute of the day. I want to play this song right now for Dylan, who's driving over to Muffin Mania to fire up the ovens, get the coffee ready. Get a call from the lieutenant governor. He had a flight that was delayed, and we're not sure exactly where he is in the Golden State, but if time permits, he'll be joining us before the end of the program. In the meantime, your calls are welcome here at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Couple of items before we take more of your calls. Lead editorial in today's New York Times says it for me. The headline reads, "The Low Road to Victory." The Pennsylvania campaign, which produced yet another inconclusive result Tuesday, was even meaner, more vacuous, more desperate, and more filled with pandering than the mean, vacuous, desperate, pander-filled contest that preceded it. Voters are getting tired of it. Yes, we are. It's demeaning the political process, and it doesn't work. It is past time for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton to acknowledge that the negativity, for which she is mostly responsible, does nothing but harm to her, her opponent, her party, and the 08 election. If nothing else, self-interest should push her in that direction. Mrs. Clinton did not get the big win in Pennsylvania she needed to challenge the calculus of the Democratic race. It's true that Barack Obama outspent her 2-1. But Mrs. Clinton and her advisors should mainly blame themselves because, as the political operatives say, they went heavily negative and ended up squandering a good part of what was once a 20-point lead. Mr. Obama is not blameless when it comes to the negative and vapid nature of this campaign. He's increasingly rising to Mrs. Clinton's bait, undercutting his own claims that he's offering a higher, more inclusive form of politics. When she criticized his comments about bitter voters, Mr. Obama mocked her as an Annie Oakley wannabe. All that does is remind Americans who are on the fence about his relative youth and inexperience. And I do agree, I've been a little disappointed in some of the comments, but if I were in Obama's place, it would be difficult to resist. You know, I'm a pretty shoot-from-the-lip, opinionated guy. And if somebody attacked me for not wearing an American flag lapel pin, or for saying understandable things about bitter people who haven't had a job in 20 years. Well, it's amazing how those have been spun and wrapped around his neck. And I'd like to see the campaign turn a corner here and either have Hillary Clinton wave goodbye or really come back to where we were at the Hollywood debate, the first one-on-one debate between Clinton and Obama. And it seems like years ago, but it was only a couple of months, where it was civil. They even offered a few warm comments about each other. I don't care about that. But I want to hear about policy. I want to hear Obama and Clinton both talk about Iran in detail. And as we discussed earlier today with Lisa Hajar, I'm very concerned about the remarks that Senator Clinton has made, upping the ante into a nuke-for-nuke exchange with Iran, all based on hypotheticals. And this is the height of recklessness. It is an irrational policy to advocate. And yet, the media is focused on her so-called double-digit victory, which was actually 9.2% in Pennsylvania yesterday. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. One more thing. We talked yesterday with Caroline Fredrickson of the ACLU and Lily Ledbetter, a woman who worked for Goodyear. I'm checking here to make sure I have it right. It was a Goodyear or a company that took it over. And she got fired after she complained that she had been discriminated against. Well, now, wait a minute. Let me regroup here, because when we talked to her yesterday, she resigned after she had filed an EEOC complaint because she learned that for 18 years, she had been paid less than her male counterparts who did the exact same work. And this became the gist of a court case that Lily Ledbetter lost last May when the John Roberts Supreme Court ruled that she had 180 days from whatever point the discrimination started to identify it and sue over it. And after 6 months, she was just out of luck. This sets a scary precedent for future cases of real discrimination where the plaintiff has to prove that they identified it and acted on it in the first 6 months. Now, when you just get hired somewhere in the first 6 months, you're not pushing the envelope about whether you get paid as much as the person next to you. You're probably on probation. And so it's just pure idiocy and a pro-corporate bias that is as transparent as all day long that this court wants to limit suits against employers by making it virtually impossible for people to sue, even over real issues. And I understand that some people have filed frivolous lawsuits or ones that didn't pass muster. But that doesn't mean everyone should be banned from suing. And now we learn that the Senate bill named for Lily Ledbetter has become a target of the Republicans. They said on Tuesday they're confident they'll be able to block legislation intended to reverse that bad Supreme Court ruling. So watch for a big battle in Washington. And this clearly shows that the Republicans only care about corporate America and not a fair legal system, not access to the courts for real wrongdoing and true harm, but simply a pro-corporate all-the-time stance. And yes, Lily Ledbetter worked at Goodyear Tire and Rubber in Gadsden, Alabama. Got that information for you. So do watch that case carefully, and I don't think you need to lobby the California senators, but other senators, particularly Republicans, are going to need some pushing on that particular issue. 888-5-PETER-B, that's our toll-free number. Josh in Salinas, you're next here in the Free Speech Zone. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Peter. You really nailed it there. The purpose of the Roberts Court is to protect corporations. If you read Molly Evans' biography of Bush.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, can you get off the speaker? It's a little echoey there.
I'm in an echoey room. I don't have any speakers on.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a speakerphone. You sound a little bit like the Wizard of Oz today.
Okay. Sorry about that.
All right.
No, I called because you mentioned getting rid of Proposition 13 and taxing all property alike on a fair standard. And I wanted to talk to you about that because, really, if you want an idea like that to win, I think it would be a good idea to modify it and to say, let's tax non-commercial property at the same rate. When I, 20 years ago, when I was a young teacher, I'd say in the staff room, we got to get rid of this Prop 13. And everyone would look at me. Teachers. Leftist teachers.
Yeah.
And they'd say, no, you're crazy.
Well, Josh, I did offer it in a slightly inflammatory way because I wanted people to respond and call up and talk about it. I recognize the political reality. Even Democrats are scared to death when somebody like me says, hey, isn't it about time to reopen Prop 13 and modify it so that corporate players can't skip a reappraisal or a reassessment when the corporation changes hands? The example I use is major department stores. Macy's has changed hands three or four times at the corporate level since Prop 13 was passed in 1977. And each time, they are able to hold on to the old assessment of their commercial property's values for tax purposes. And so you've got companies like Macy's that are still enjoying 1977 rates for commercial property that is clearly worth far more here in 2008. That's
and
just,
by the way, Peter, they're not charging 1977 prices for the goods you buy there, and they're not receiving 1977 worth of California government services.
Right.
Yeah, of course that's true. The thing is, you know, Howard Jarvis's ghost comes back and bites anyone who says they want to do anything about Proposition 13 because people still believe, quite falsely, but he did a good job, that Proposition 13 is about saving the homeowner money.
Right.
Now that I am a homeowner, now that my house is doubled in property value since purchasing it, I do understand what those older teachers were looking at me strangely for.
All right. Now, Josh, what about the house next door where that lovely older couple has lived since before 1977, and they're paying, what, about $500 a year in property taxes, and you're paying maybe $5,000?
Exactly.
Same tract home, same neighborhood, same comparable value.
Oh, exactly. The houses are almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My next-door neighbors on both sides are paying way less than I do. But on one side, the guy's retired.
Yeah.
The other side, she's almost retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I can do that. I can't be a corporation, Peter. I can't own millions of dollars of property all over the state. And I can't be immortal. You know, corporations are immortal, they're wealthy, and they don't need a clean environment like people. The only difference between corporations and vampires is vampires suck blood. But if vampires were real, you can bet your bottom dollar garlic would be illegal. Well, corporations do exist, and they're even legal persons. And that's why we have these crazy situations where corporations enjoy rights that people have, and people don't enjoy the rights corporations have, because I can't do it, corporations.
Right, and
I don't want to take these rights away from corporations like you do. And I wouldn't mind, and most taxpayers wouldn't mind, if it was just your residence was always protected by Prop 13, that'd be fine. You know, I don't care if my neighbors are paying less than me, as long as I have the chance of getting there someday.
Well,
but here's
the thing.
Macy's.
Josh, I love my neighbors, too. And I am not interested in squeezing retired people or about-to-retire people out of their homes by arbitrarily raising their property taxes. What we need is a system that really is fair. And every year that people buy homes in California, Prop 13 becomes more and more unfair for those people who recently bought. And
absolutely.
In
if
order
you want to touch Prop 13, you're going to have to start it by doing the easy stuff and building support.
Well, I'm with you there. I do understand that. But I think that we also have to look at this in a systemic way and see that the crisis that is going to descend on Sacramento, and I'll predict here right now that we will not have a budget before the end of August. It might be even into September. The Republican obstructionists will just keep saying, no new taxes, no new taxes. Well, you know, you're going to shut down the University of California. You're going to open up the gates at Soledad and say, hey, you guys, we can't afford to keep you locked up. Be good. I mean, we have to make some really tough choices here about what government services we value and how much we're willing to pay for them. But the idea that we can survive this current downturn, and we're only partway through it. The real estate cycle is not going to return, in my view, for another 18 to 24 months, which is at least two more fiscal years of really bad problems in Sacramento. And so we...
The real estate cycle never put us in good shape, Peter. It was the dot-com boom that put us in good shape for a while, but otherwise, I can't remember when we've had a good budget year.
Well, in the late 90s, actually, before the dot-com people cashed in their stocks and paid either capital gains or income tax on that, property values rose very steadily through the 1990s, and many people were buying new homes and paying the new rate of property tax. So there was an influx of new property tax money during the 90s and up until about 2004. But we have seen, you're correct, that it's eBay and Google millionaires and a few billionaires who diversified by cashing in and buying something else and had to pay their taxes at that point. That has given a windfall to Sacramento the last few years. It isn't there this year. And so it is laid bare that we cannot fund state government on property taxes the way Prop 13 has it structured. And do you want higher sales taxes, higher income taxes, or do you want to expand the sales tax onto professions or other things that currently aren't taxed? Those are the options we face. And Schwarzenegger, with this empty no new taxes pledge, is really boxed into a corner. And his biggest problem is members of his own party.
He's lucky he's turned out. He said, we can't borrow money to solve the problem anyone except me.
Well, and maybe he'll go back to making really bad movies with big box office receipts and donate some of it to California. Thanks a lot. Good to talk with you there, Josh. We're going to take a break and return here. I've got lines open if you want to join the conversation. The Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. 888-5-PETER-B.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and pretty quiet right now. We had an earlier accident that was southbound 101 at Arroyo Seco Road. It looks like the left lane may still be blocked out there with emergency crews conducting an investigation. 152 at Holsklaw Road, an earlier accident was involved with a car that went off the roadway. It was being pursued by the local sheriff's department. That's in the final clearing stages. Granite Creek Road at Celeste Way in Santa Cruz, broken down pickup truck blocking a lane. You have CHP on the scene. And 152 east of Casa de Fruta Parkway on the Pacheco Pass. We have a dog that's walking in the lane, so drive with caution there. Highway 17, no stalls and no accidents. Slow traffic south 17 onto southbound 1. This is brought to you by Act Restoring Mouthwash. Act Restoring Mouthwash is a three-act mouthwash. Act 1 kills germs. Act 2 restores minerals to soft spots. And Act 3 strengthens tooth enamel up to 2 times harder. Be sure to get Act Restoring Mouthwash. If you spot a traffic problem, let us know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the Sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Slow down.
This is Professor Mossberg, your host here at KRXA for the Poetry Slowdown. T.S. Eliot said, April is the cruelest month. What is cruel about April? Think about it for yourself. Call me on the show or write me at Barbara@KRXA540.com. We want to know your ideas for Cruel April, and I'll tell you how my answer to that question 40 years ago launched my career in 30 countries with erupting volcanoes, caves, and other joys and terrors. As the poet Tennyson said, all times I have enjoyed greatly and suffered greatly, both with those who loved me and alone. We'll be talking about Cruel Aprils, spring, poems you love to hate to memorize. We'll have a glorious time making the morning last, your inner poet kicking down those cobblestones. Sundays, right here on KRXA at high noon.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the home stretch here. Triple 855 Peter B. or my email peter@peterbcollins.com. Be in touch, please.
I could talk in this lovely land, and I thank God for that, but there's needles in the sand. Oh, some in the eucalypt and on the steps tonight. There's a pushing and a shoving on the floor tonight. It's a rhythm of the sea, lost islands of hope. It's a rhythm of the sea.
We're feeling the rhythm of the sea, and the waves are washing up there at Pebble Beach, where Joe's on the line. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. You're on the air. How about that?
Hey, what do you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, that was fun. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hey, you know what? thank God for Prop 13.
Yeah?
And that guy's just waking up. He said he's got a home. Hey, guess what? He's already changing his mind, isn't he? He's starting to realize what the old folks knew all along.
What's that?
The taxation will take your home away.
Well, Joe, are you holding on to yours?
You know what? I don't have a home, but I'm not jealous of people who do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not jealous of people who want to stay in their homes.
Right.
And what idiot would want to tax corporations more? Anytime you tax a corporation, that makes it less viable for them to hire more people. It increases costs. Who wants that?
Well, Joe, then if you were in charge, you just wouldn't have any taxes at all, right?
Where did you make that leap?
Well, you've described every tax, and you are opposed to increasing them. And, you know, the state is broke, and we have to look somewhere for money to fund the services that you and I enjoy on a daily basis.
Well, you know what? I can tell you the answer to that. We've got to go up to Sacramento. We've got to throttle the Democrat-controlled state legislature. They've never met a tax increase they didn't like, and they've never found a way to cut their spending. They're spending our money. We can't work hard enough for those guys.
Joe, after you throttled the Democrat-controlled legislature, you gave away your position there with a code word.
There's no code word. I'm upfront about it.
What exactly would you do to restore the state to fiscal balance?
Getting rid of the Democrats is going to be a major part of it, because they're the ones who are spending like drunken sailors.
Well, Joe, that won't fix the problem. What would you cut?
It will indeed fix
Joe,
the problem.
Joe, I repeat the question. What would you cut?
I would cut the Democrats, and then when you get the Democrats out there, when you get the right employees, the right legislators, then they will make the right decisions.
That's
what a representative government is. But you've got to get the right representatives in there, not mm-hmm. guys who are spending money faster than you can create it.
And Joe, what services would you cut?
Maybe you don't understand. I'm not for cutting any services. I am for them not spending like drunken sailors.
Hey, Joe, you're incoherent.
Well,
all you're doing is talking in a circle with Republican talking points and blaming Democrats for spending like drunken sailors.
Well,
and then you say you put Republicans in there and they'll make the right decisions. But you're not willing to tell me one thing that you would cut from the state budget in order to avoid tax increases.
You know what? I'm not the representative who's spent time looking at every jot and tittle. That's what we have representatives for. You've got to spend responsible people up there. It's like two people. You give two people $20. One will buy what they need and have money left over. Another one will spend the $20 and they'll come back for more. That's very simple. It's easy to understand. Anybody can understand it.
Joe?
Except the liberals.
All right, Joe. You're impervious. You've got it all.
All we need is
to put Republicans in charge, and everything will be hunky dory.
Back when the Democrat Party was halfway coherent, they told Harry Truman, "Give him hell, Harry." Harry said, "I just tell the truth, and they think it's hell."
Joe, thanks for calling, I think.
Bye-bye.
That's why it's hopeless, friends. That's why it's hopeless. Here's a story just breaking in my email. You know about Tony Rezko, Barack Obama's friend, under trial in Chicago for graft and corruption. Well, a new element has surfaced here, and we'll be watching it on the Peter B. Collins Show. Tony Rezko went to another friend who knows Karl Rove. And he tried to pull strings to get Karl Rove to fire Patrick Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald, of course, was investigating Karl Rove and others for the Valerie Plame outing. And he serves permanently, or at least his main job, is the U.S. attorney in Chicago, where he brought charges against Tony Rezko. Holy cow! Rezko and Rove.
Happy trails.
What a dream ticket. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. And, Joe, thanks for that amusing call. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Same time, same great radio stations.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes.
Everything's gone up.
It's gasoline. It's bread. It's rice now.
People are stockpiling rice in this country because they're afraid they won't be able to get rice.
Milo Hamilton at FirstGrain.com blames commodity speculators. Pat Datto is the owner of the California Rice Exchange.
Rice is the most widely consumed grain in the world. Most of it's consumed right where it's produced, but there's plenty of demand for it, and the supply has really fallen off in the last few years.
Gasoline, more than $3.50 a gallon. Oil sold above $118 a barrel again today.
Putting food on the table isn't just a concern. It's downright hard for almost half of Americans. A USA Today Gallup poll shows 73% of us are worried about the rising food prices.
It's always a concern because anytime money is going out, there's money I'm not saving.
It's way up, like milk and eggs and, you know, everything's made with wheat. Going crazy.
Even the more frugal strategies are being challenged.
For me, I shop around. I do the sale paper, so I shop around. And then it's kind of hard because then the gas prices, you know, is up.
Andrew Mullenbeck for CBS News, Los Angeles.
Iraq now expects a surprise windfall of more than $70 billion in oil revenues, which is expected to add fuel to calls the Iraqis pay more of the cost of rebuilding their own country. This is the ad that John McCain says he wishes the GOP wouldn't run in North Carolina.
For 20 years, Barack Obama sat in his pew.
He called and asked them not to run that message. It's not the message of the Republican Party. It's not the message of my campaign.
God damn America!
Now, the GOP in the state says it plans to run the commercial anyway. Are scientists working for government agencies influenced by the administration that employs them? The Union of Concerned Scientists says yes. CBS's Wyatt Andrews.
The report cannot definitively say whether political interference under the Bush administration, by the numbers, is worse than it has been in previous Democratic administrations. But the numbers do speak for themselves. This is almost 900 scientists out of an EPA universe of 8,000 scientists who believe that the scientific conclusions they come up with on toxic chemicals and pollutants in general suffer political interference from the Bush administration.
437 children